the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Right, you're very welcome along this Monday morning to OTB AM. It is a Monday. It's going to be hard for us to keep track of what day of the week it is, but we're going to do our best here. It's Monday morning. It's 7:30 and you're very welcome along wherever you're watching us in the world. Do feel free to get in touch with us this morning. Let us know how things are for you. What kind of a weekend you've had. You can use the hashtag OTBM or you can WhatsApp us. It's 087-9180-180 is the number. Yeah, that's not a great start for us this morning here, Owen. How are you?
Very well. It's, remember, it's 9-darter-180.
9-darter. You know darts is not my strong point here, but by the end of all this, Owen, I will remember that the number to get in touch with us is 087-9180-180. And if you're obviously Harlar abroad, then you can get in touch with us. +353-87-9180-180. It's catchy, Owen. It's catchy.
It's very catchy. Actually, it's a good point. I'm sure you'll be tuning in whenever Raymond van Barneveld and Phil Taylor have their virtual matchup. Because, of course, it's a sport that can go ahead as long as each and every person is kind of solitary, confined to actually keep a room to themselves. So little camera in each of their rooms, and they're going to take each other on in a virtual darts game. So I'm sure your eyes will be glued to that in a few weeks' time or whenever it's happening.
So how does it work? They just film themselves and you...
A live stream. Like, it's... They will wait for each other to take their turn. To be honest with you, I haven't looked into the precise logistics of it, but I assume that is how it would go. I was thinking to myself, how would I organise a darts competition against Phil Taylor or Raymond van Barneveld? And I think with the modern technology, it would actually be pretty easy. Like, I could take you on in the game of darts right now, and the rules of the game could be upheld fairly well, I would have thought.
As in, it's the only sport that you can really do and you don't need to be in the same room with somebody, and it would be completely the same because... there's no stress or pressure and it's not actually a sport, is what you're saying?
Well, no, you could do golf as well.
Could you?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, on two separate courses if you wanted to say
it's not
totally
the same course.
They're not playing. Yeah, sorry, good point. I will come up with something. I'll come up with something that is like that. Maybe like a free throw competition in basketball or something, or a slam. If you want to do the All-Star Weekend in the NBA, like the slam dunk contest and the 3-point contest, you could make that happen.
Yeah, definitely. So several golfers have holes at their properties where we could map them out and we could all play them on PlayStation while they were actually playing them, walking around with a virtual reality headset going, ooh, would that work?
It certainly could. It's certainly a little bit dystopian, but I think everything kind of feels dystopian at the moment. Like, does any golfer actually have kind of a full course out their backyard, or is it just kind of little sections here and there?
Jim Nantz has a couple of holes from Augusta rebuilt in his backyard.
Oh, wow.
As far as I know. So if he's got that, you can assume that some of the best players in the world probably have their own. You wouldn't need a full course because that would just be, you'd get bored of it and it would be expensive. Mm. You could have like 4 or 5 holes and that would just be perfect, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm sure we're going to play this Patrick Harrington video later on, but he's certainly been showing off his back garden golf course. His kind of mid-range game has certainly been helped quite a lot by what he's got going on in his house.
Yeah, I always thought he had an indoor facility. For some reason, I had a vague recollection of reading a piece with him a couple of years back, which talked about there being a big indoor facility so that he could train. The inclement weather had no impact on his ability to be the best golfer in the world, which was obviously important for him at one point or another. How are you getting on, Owen? What were your anxiety levels like over the weekend?
Not too bad, actually. Not too bad. I think I'm getting the hang of this thing now. I think I'm getting the hang of it to the point where the key is to not do very much at all. I think a lot of us have been swept away in this wave of trying to be extremely productive. And there might be a little bit of productivity shaming going on in the world right now, saying, oh, you know, gardened my entire property there, 400 acres. Green Fingers O'Connor here has shown me up yet again, trimming everything and planting loads of seeds, all that sort of thing. And people have cleaned rooms, cleaned houses, and fair play to them. They've sorted bookshelves, whatever it may be. I have done nothing. I have done absolutely zero when it comes to these sort of so-called productive things over the last week or so. And the weekend, I actually decided that is okay. I'm going to be okay with that. Like we're still thankfully fortunate enough where we can walk outside in this house. I will be cleaning my house once I have to stay indoors. Now, I know a lot of people who went outside kind of took the liberty of going to the beach or going to incredibly crowded areas over the course of the weekend, which is obviously not an amazing situation either. But yeah, my weekend was kind of just getting used to being okay with not doing very much at all, which I'm obviously being tongue-in-cheek when I say that, but I think that there might actually be kind of a serious point there as well, that maybe we are getting a little bit carried away about, crap, we have to do stuff. We absolutely have to do stuff because this is our one chance to sort the house out or whatever it may be.
Yeah, or, you know, teach the kids Spanish or Spanish guitar or guitar. And it's like, well, maybe if they could all just be happy in themselves as we get through this global pandemic, huddled together, trying just desperately to survive, that might be okay too.
Absolutely. Like, there's certainly a temptation there to, like, I completely see what you're saying with kids, but even for ourselves, a lot of people who don't have kids, it's like, do I download Duolingo and become better at French than I already am? Do I put that undue pressure on myself? Is it something that I want to do? Would that actually make me happier by downloading Duolingo and learning a bit of French this evening? If the answer to that question is yes, then absolutely do it. If the answer to that question is no, then absolutely do not do that thing. It's quite simple, actually. Do I want to do it? Will I get enjoyment out of that thing right now? I think they're very important questions, rather than, will this make me a better person? Now is not the time to think about how to make yourself a better person, I think. This is just my opinion. I think it's a time to actually do what makes you feel a better person or feel like you're actually a happier person.
But you're missing out on the ability to brag about it on Instagram or whatever social platform you've chosen to tell everybody about how great you are.
Here, listen. Getting to watch 5 seasons of Better Call Saul in 5 days is achievement enough for me right now.
How far along are you?
I'm not finished season 2 yet, actually. For somebody with all the time in the world to binge, I actually haven't got that far at all. Like, I've had other distracting things going on in my life, like binge-watching Dream Team. So life is busy right now, I think it's fair to say.
And when are you going to finish binge-watching Dream Team? What stage are you at? If people are following this on our social channels, and on your own, of course... how far along are you in the Dream Team binge?
I think I'm like into episode 50 something from season 1 at the moment.
Right.
So I watched a good few over the course of the weekend, but I don't know, there wasn't enough happening.
At some point, are you going to give up? I mean, this is the whole point. You can just give up.
Well, see, this is where this is where the competitive spirit in me comes out. And I don't think I'm going to be defeated by Dream Team. If I'm going to park everything I just said and I'm going to finish Dream Team. Dream Team is my learning French on Duolingo. I think it is. It does.
I'm going to do this. You haven't finished it.
Hell or high water comes to mind when I think about Dream Team and finishing this whole thing at this point. So yeah, like did a couple of episodes of the course of the weekend. That the last article I wrote was on the back of a particularly dramatic time, as in like one of the most stupidly absurd conclusions to a run of episodes I've ever seen. So everything from that point has kind of been post the apex, sort of. So I just need to kind of recalibrate my idea of what a television show should be. Might try and get another piece up today or tomorrow.
Is Carl Fletcher in it at the moment?
Yes, he is. Bit of a player with an A rather than an ER at the end, Carl Fletcher. He's a bit heartbroken, actually, at the moment. His girlfriend has gone off to work for Sky Sports, so she's not around anymore. So poor Carl.
She was going out with the manager at one point as well? Is there a love triangle between the manager and the...
No, it was the star player Dean Hocknull, and she also had an affair with the club chairman who had a heart attack and died.
Okay, club chairman, sorry, not the manager. And is there a Karen Brady figure in it as well? Is the new chairman...
Well, the chairman is now the widow of the guy who had a heart attack. So maybe she is the Karen Brady. I haven't really seen many comparable qualities. Like, for example, she hasn't called for a season to be called off midway through. That's a topical joke right there in Karen Brady. But no, I don't know. I don't know who the Karen Brady figure is, but I'm sure there might be more, because I think she's looking to sell her shares in the club, actually. But, you know, this is all an area of unknowing. I'm sure countless people out there will be able to correct you on that one. I'm a mere novice at this thing.
Yeah, okay. So Owen is committed to that, even if it is the thing that tips him over into insanity. He's going to continue watching as opposed to just giving up because you're bored of it by now. But we're going to do Better Call Saul at some point very soon.
Yes. Very soon, you'll see this tomorrow morning on OTBAM. Anybody, we're going to do this season by season. And by the time we're finished this, I think season 5 should be wrapping up. It's obviously about midway through at the moment on a week-by-week basis. A television show that is releasing episodes on a week-by-week basis. Who would have ever thought of that idea?
It is a bit mad when you think about it, and you got to put yourself in that context as well. Okay, talking about Karen Brady, I'm pretty sure that John Hartson has called for Rangers to concede the title to Celtic for this year, the 9 in a row, just to concede it because, you know, they weren't going to win it anyway, which is, you know, a fair point. But I do like the fact that he's using this opportunity to keep up the petty bitterness that has pockmarked that rivalry between Celtic and Rangers down through the century and a half that it's been around. I mean, what else is a global pandemic for but to get one over on your small town local rival?
I actually I hadn't seen this from John Hartson.
It's just in the papers today, so I don't want to misquote him, or, you know, I'm sure he's being very reasonable about the whole thing, but the headline itself suggested that it was like, well, yeah, just give us the league, lads, come on.
It's is there some sort of peace offering that they also have to make? Are they going to meet them at some sort of undisclosed location in Glasgow, where the Rangers chiefs bow down to Celtic superiority? What is it? Is this going to be? Is this going to be the 9 in a row? Right?
Yeah, yeah,
or 10
yeah.
In a row?
Nine in a row. Yeah, so 9 in a row is obviously the figure that is historic.
Rangers
done. It's been done before. I mean, if this one is voided, and then they'd have to win the 9 in a row next year to get to 10, is obviously a 3-year. Odyssey, assuming that we're all still playing football around at that point. I'm going to bring everybody through the sports news for the day, and we're starting with the Olympics because Canada has become the first nation to officially withdraw its athletes from the 2020 Olympic Games, sparking further doubt about whether or not the Tokyo Games will go ahead as planned. The Canadian Olympic and Paralympic Committee has said that it's taken the difficult decision to withdraw after consulting athletes, sports groups and the Canadian government. It comes after the IOC gave itself a 4-week deadline to make a decision on whether or not to postpone the Games, which are due, of course, to begin in July. The board have insisted that cancelling the Games is not on the agenda currently. Postponement is thought to be the most likely outcome, although overnight the Japanese organisers have said again that this won't be postponed or cancelled, but once the countries start pulling out, that's going to be the end of that. And you can tell that the American Track and Field Association came out and said they didn't want to be part of it, and if they don't want to be part of it, then NBC aren't going to spend the billions, and if NBC aren't spending the billions, this thing isn't going to go ahead. So we're just waiting to see exactly how and when that's refixed for. In soccer, SSE Electricity League Premier Division side Bows say they are planning to honour the contracts of players and staff despite the suspension of football activity in Ireland. Cork and Sligo have both reluctantly had to suspend payments to staff in recent days as the financial pressures of the lockdown begin to mount. There are plans to restart the league in mid-June, with Bows saying they will honour the contracts, though the situation will be kept under continuous review. Meanwhile, Toby Alderweireld is donating dozens of electronic tablets to hospitals to help sick people stay in contact with family and friends. He announced the initiative in a social media post at the weekend. He urged people to follow government measures in the fight against coronavirus, and he said he hopes to get as many devices to places where they can help people stay in touch with loved ones. Matt Letizia said he believes the Premier League could resume behind closed doors during the coronavirus outbreak. The club's chief executive, Southampton, have suggested showing top flight games live on TV every day while people are in their homes. Overnight, yesterday afternoon, the AFL in Australia suspended games. They had obviously started their season behind closed doors, but there's now been a lockdown, a much more serious lockdown in Australia than there had been announced previous to that, and interstate travel was banned, so it would have meant that it was impossible for teams to travel. But apparently there were massive ratings on the Friday night for the match that they actually did play, so you can see that people need stuff to watch when they're at home, and if there was any way to get some sport up and running, a sense of normality might begin to resume, obviously assuming when it's safe to do so. The flat season gets underway at Naas Racecourse later on this afternoon. The meeting takes place behind closed doors. The first of a 7 race card goes to post at 2 o'clock. A lot of eyes on Sir Dragonet, who goes in the Davoy Stakes at 4 o'clock. Many people think that the Aidan O'Brien trained Sir Dragonet is a superstar in the making. Here's what we have coming up on the show for you this morning. We're going to do the sports pages right now. Alan Quinlan's going to join us at 8 o'clock. Kelly Harrington is going to talk to us about what she thinks is going to happen with the Olympics and the qualifiers, and also what she made of the people queuing for the chipper in Howth. She tweeted about it last night. I don't know if you've seen that video that somebody took from their car of the queues snaking around the corner for fish and chips. I mean, everybody knows that it's okay to queue, but you've got a queue with 2 metres between you and 2 metres behind you, and it turns out we just can't queue. At the best of times, we can't queue, and here we are at the worst of times. We're not being very good at our social distancing, so we'll talk a bit about that around about 8:15 this morning as well. After that, We've got Joey Boland introducing Off the Couch, which is our brand new daily segment where we're going to try and keep you all active. I mean, I know Owen's saying you don't have to do stuff, but this is the type of stuff that won't take you very long and will actually make you feel a good bit better. Get those endorphins going. So Joey Boland, ex-hurler, now obviously runs a gym and is teaching people how to get fit. And then Classic Game Club, Tipperary versus Kilkenny 2014, the greatest game ever played, according to Anthony Daly on Twitter yesterday. What did you make of that, Owen?
Yeah, it's right up there, isn't it? It's certainly the greatest game I think I've ever seen. And I think John Duggan, who'll be joining us later on for that, would certainly go along with that as well. It's hard to think of any moment other than this that kind of sums up peak hurling. It's hard to know if we're still living in peak hurling or not. Probably time will tell, but this was either the beginning or maybe the very peak of it all. Just a perfect game. One of those where you look back on it and think to yourself, that guy is having an all-time brilliant game, possibly one of his best games ever for his county. But the guy who's marking him is also having one of the best games ever for his county. So there's a lot of different contradictions in this, a lot of beautiful contradictions. So it was on TG Cahir yesterday, up on YouTube as well.
Are we going to have to do the replay as well now that we've done this one?
No, I don't think so.
I felt like I was at the end of it. I kind of want to watch the next one now and see exactly we can talk about that during Classic Game Club if you want, but
we can do. I just think that if you compare the quality of the two games, the replay in 2014 just isn't anywhere as good as the first game. And quality-wise, it probably is right up there. And there was probably a few tactical shifts that swung it Kilkenny's way and personnel shifts. But I just think that drawn game in 2014 just has a special place in everybody's heart. I think that the Hawkeye element of it all, the drama, the individual battles, I just don't think the replay lived up to that. And how could it possibly do?
All right, 087-9180-180 is the number you can text us on, or WhatsApp us. 087-9180-180 is the number to WhatsApp us on. It's time for the papers. OTB AM. Okay, so I've got the front page of offtheball.com is, you can stick that back up there. Yeah, Alan Shearer had David Ginola up against the wall. Mark Lawrenson joined the lads on Sunday afternoon, speaking with Joe Malloy about a proper career retrospective. This is at Newcastle. And Ginola is such a mercurial talent that never quite lived up to all of the things he could do, because there was stuff that he could do with the ball. He was so big and so strong and so powerful that he was completely unstoppable. Liverpool CEO offers club stewards to supermarkets for crowds, so that's football finding ways to get involved and to help things. Brian O'Driscoll just made a plea about social distancing. We don't want to end up like Italy, and I think the more people that have this conversation the better, because the message is still clearly not getting through. I think he tweeted that on Friday or Saturday night, and obviously Saturday and Sunday they had to close the car parks because people were going out. I know everybody's really bored, but heading out, and then when you get wherever you're going, standing beside people, not great for us. And then reaction, Diego Maradona, the movie, obviously Channel 4 showed it again on Friday night, I think. I've recorded it. I still haven't seen this. Is it amazing?
Yeah, it's very, very good. Like, it's just so well made. But I think it's a really good piece of journalism as well. Like, we spoke about this quite a bit when it was made, and when it came out last summer, we had Asif Kapadia, the director, in studio, actually, and he got a finite number of interviews with Diego Maradona. I think it was 3 conversations he was signed up to have with him, which is obviously a tricky thing when you really are delving into the drug culture which Diego Maradona took part in, everything from the murky underbelly of his life in Naples. That was all covered in the documentary so well, and yet you were coming face to face with this guy on a regular basis to actually interview him for the documentary. So it's got that level of fascination about it, but it's just so slick, so well produced. Like, it's, if you enjoyed Amy or if you enjoyed Senna, you're going to love this, even if you're not a football fan, even if you're not a Maradona fan. And I think even if you aren't a Maradona fan, you might even enjoy it a bit more, because it is a three-dimensional picture of him, which is what you want from a documentary like this.
Going to start with the Irish Independent for you here this morning. Back page of the headline is Coming Out of the Shadows, and that is a picture from Downpatrick yesterday where the Ulster National was held, and obviously racing today continues in Nace. It's the first day of the flat season officially. IOC attempt to buy time, but Olympic Games edge closer to postponement is the lead story there. And Bowes vow to honour players' contracts as they offer solidarity to crisis hit clubs. Some features inside the paper as well. They're speaking with Shane McNaughton, the former Cushion Doll hurler who is now an actor.
The Irish Daily Star this morning leads with, "You can have my house." This is Connacht star Copeland's amazing gesture to HSE staff. So this is Robin Copeland, who's come out and offered free accommodation to HSE staff in Galway. You've got that Bowes story as well, vowing to pay on. A Kingdom US trip in doubt. So this is Kerry GEA, who may not be able to go on their fundraising trip to the United States this year. The flat season starts at Nace. Ben's Space Invader is a first win. And Olympics to be postponed is how the Irish Daily Star rounds up. The UK version of the Star this morning leads with "Start from scratch, sorry cop, but it's the only answer," says Joe Cole. So Joe Cole going with the Karen Brady line that this season should be scrapped if they can't get it played this summer. And legend Pacquiao is not afraid to die in fight against virus, he says.
I see both sides about the seasons. It's like the season that you would lose would be next season, not this one. If you finish this season off, or you would have a truncated season next year. So two seasons get ruined. Is the right thing to do not to say this is the end of this year?
But that means you're ruining this season.
I mean, there's a global pandemic. The season got ruined. Everybody goes, fair enough.
Like, yeah, I get that, but you're kind of making the point about ruining two seasons or one season. At least if you finish this season off at the end of this year, or for like whenever it is, then at least it's not this season getting ruined. Like, I don't know. I think that if you started something, you should probably go out of your way to try and finish it within reason, obviously. So if life returns to normality this year, then get the season finished. But obviously my view on that would change if it's November this year and football still has yet to return. Then I think it's just getting out of hand. It's not within reason. But I think if we somehow manage to have any football this summer, then I think you finish off this season and just have it boxed off and don't have any sort of nonsense about who really won the league or do you really give it to Liverpool or who got relegated, all this sort of thing.
I mean, you can do it. You just raise around all that. Anyway, here's a double-page spread for the Examiner this morning. The strangest week in Irish sporting history is a double-page spread they have over a great piece where they've got all their writers out talking to people. So Colm O'Connor speaking to a club. We have Stephen Findlater talking to a player. So the hockey team, obviously the hockey team will qualify for the Olympics. John Fogarty talking to a coach. Everybody has a GPS. We get sent back the data. John Cannon, Galway senior football selector and forwards coach. They have Stephen Barry talking to a League of Ireland team. And Declan Bogue is a really interesting piece where he talks about Stephen Poacher, who obviously we would have known nationally as the coach of the Carlow football team. He's also a teacher at a second level institution in Newry. And so GA, all activity closed. And then in his day job, PE was continuing and he had 60 kids out playing for an hour on a field. And he's like, look at this. And Declan Bogue's written another piece with him, I think in the Independent as well today, where Poacher's rightly pointing out that the advice was completely contradictory. And, you know, this the British government decision to follow the course that they did at the start of this, well, let's wait and see what the repercussions of that are going to be. It's all pretty grim. Good piece from Jack Anderson today. Sports should know when to fold them and walk away. Obviously, Kenny Rogers died over the course of the weekend. A song very associated with sport. He's saying that racing needs to follow the path of all the other sports and stop at the moment, and that it's difficult for the it's difficult to see Tokyo going ahead as well at this point. So I think we're just really waiting for how they're going to suspend the Olympic Games and when it's going to happen or what their target is, whether or not they try and shoehorn it in November, December this year, or if perhaps they just decide to push it back to next summer and see exactly what happens there. What have you got for us next on?
We've got the Mirror next, and it is leading with that IOC story. Stop the games. It says Olympic chiefs finally admit games could be postponed but not cancelled, while legend Lewis says hold them in 2 years' time. We need to talk about the Prem then, as a debate rages on the future. Schneidlund says we'll play on until August to finish the season. Glenn Murray's been out to say we cannot play on until fans are allowed back. And Joe Cole there again. Sorry, Liverpool. If we can't finish, start again.
Yeah. Look, here's the thing, right? If they can play behind closed doors, as they're planning to do, then I think that's not the worst thing that's ever happened. Assuming, of course, that it's safe to do so, right? Let's just assume that it's absolutely safe, that somehow they've managed to cocoon these athletes away and they're tested constantly the whole way through, and they're all put in quarantine for 14 days, and they come out of that, and it's like, and they're leading these perfectly germ-free lives. Which, it sounds a little bit pie in the sky, but if they can do that, and if in 6 weeks' time football returns, and it is behind closed doors, then You, obviously, if it's safe to do so, then we should do that, right?
You would have thought so. Like, there are so many, when you talk about pie in the sky, I think this is definition of that, but there are so many different eventualities here about where this does end up. Like, is it a situation where things will automatically be fine once this wave of, and once the spread has stopped, or is it going to be a situation where there is going to be another wave, or that we will have to be uber cautious for a period of time afterwards? Like, is it a situation where footballers may be allowed in a very controlled environment in a few months down the line, but we still can't have any mass gatherings for a long, long time? That could be the case. So perhaps we do need to get used to this possibility of actually having football in empty stadiums when things start to turn back a little bit more towards normality. But the bottom line is that we really don't know, and there are like firm dates sometimes being thrown out. Like, the Premier League is still clinging to an idea of, you know, last week it was the start of April. Now obviously this has been pushed back by a month or so. That I just don't see how anybody can really stand over any dates with any sort of confidence at the moment, because we just don't know what the hell is going to happen when things clear up, if they're going to clear up, and how soon it is going to happen. So like, it could be a situation actually where you do have a few weeks of a window where things might be okay before another wave, for example. Again, I'm like, this has been one of the theories put out there. And is that the situation where you try and wrap up this season and just kind of go back into the trenches then for a while, and then start next season a few months later? I don't know. I'm sure these are questions that are going to come up over the next couple of months for sure, when Premier League chiefs meet again.
The back page of the London Times, talking about a couple of those stories, is a picture from the back of Anfield on the day that Liverpool were supposed to win the title. Two schoolboys play out their dreams in the shadow of Anfield on the day Liverpool could have sealed their first title in 30 years against Crystal Palace. And West Ham face battle to play at home. This is an interesting little subtext that's going on here. Matt Lawton and Martin Ziegler are reporting on both these stories in the back page here. West Ham will face stiff opposition from UK Athletics using the London Stadium for matches if the Premier League season goes beyond the end of June. Top flight football has been put on hold, obviously, until April the 30th at the earliest because of coronavirus, meaning games could be played in July when the anniversary games are expected to be held at the club's London Stadium. Now, this is all that's our stadium for July, not yours, when stuff is going to go ahead. Let's wait and see if the anniversary games are going ahead in July. But anyway, West Ham insists a clause in their contract with the stadium owner gives them first option, but UK Athletics said yesterday that athletics has priority. So nothing like a petty squabble as the global pandemic rips through a country to expose exactly who has some sense of priority. IOC in talks to delay games. This is the general consensus that while they're insisting everything on the surface is going ahead as planned, that actually there's no chance of these Olympic Games going ahead. So as they had insisted they would. I have the Guardian for you next, if I can just... so there's an ad for Tesco on the back page there. And Rory Best is the back page lead on the Guardian this morning. You develop this chip on your shoulder, Rory Best, on insecurity, being captain of Ireland and the future. And Olympic deadline set. IOC has 4 weeks to decide, but postponement is likely. That's the consensus coming from that. Haven't had a chance yet to look through the Rory Best interview, but I will over the course of the morning, and we'll come back to you with some of the highlights from that. What have you got for us next, Owen?
The Irish Sun goes with Olympics on the brink. IOC admit games face delay. Ruby backs Irish racing. Roberto's Italy pain with a photograph there of Roberto Mancini. And Fellaini positive. That story emerging over the course of the weekend that Marouane Fellaini has tested positive for COVID-19.
The Irish Times next. I've got this for you here. And it is Tokyo 2020 postponement looks increasingly likely. It's the headline over Ian O'Riordan's piece. And Lyons backs HRI decision to continue racing. Top trainer Ger Lyons believes racing here is just one positive coronavirus test away from coming to a halt, but has backed the sport continuing behind closed doors for as long as possible. Are there any... Cheltenham was an own goal, but don't forget Cheltenham was an English game, not ours. Our lads partook. The own goal on our part was what they did when they came home. You shouldn't have been told to self-isolate, and some of them didn't. If people think it's an own goal going ahead at Thurles yesterday, Downpatrick today, or Naas tomorrow, they don't understand the business. What we're doing is 20 jockeys going racing to keep a livelihood. It's horses running. There will be betting on that. You're not saving the world, but you're keeping going. I think it means they should have been told to self-isolate. And some of them didn't. Fellaini tests positive for COVID-19, so that's the Marouane Fellaini story that you've already spoken about there, and Malky Clarkin has a column. What does post-COVID normality even look like? When will we think it's okay to shake hands again, or to hug a friend you haven't seen for a while? Or yes, God bless us and save us all, when will it be okay to go out for a pint? Maybe we should get used to a culture of drinking on the streets and shouting to each other from across the road.
Yeah, but like, this is going to be possibly something that has long-lasting impact. Like, will it be a situation where, like, we just take unbelievable care about every single communication we have with other people down the line? I think it might do. I think certain people will certainly be taking things very, very seriously from now on when it comes to things like handshaking, close communication, all that sort of thing. So probably we've got to get used to a different way of certainly socializing when this whole thing is allows us to get back out of the house again. I'm going to bring you the Financial Times this morning. A picture from Madrid is the main photograph, but it just is also carrying that Olympic Games story as well. Olympics faces postponement of up to 2 years as pressure mounts in Tokyo. So this is the other thing at play here as well, that, you know, somebody broke ranks from the Olympic Council a couple of weeks ago and said it could be 2021 or 2022, I should say, before the Olympics are actually carried out. So it may not be next summer. It may not be the end of this year. They would push it back by a few months. It could be a 2 year postponement, given all the different governing bodies at play and all the different sports at play. So I want to keep an eye on for sure. 4 weeks is the deadline they've given themselves.
And why the whole point about 2 years? Is it what would prevent them from doing a year? The 2 years gets everybody out of the woods and understands exactly what's going to happen. There would have been a world championship in most sports in 2 years after the Olympics anyway. Is that the thinking, or is there a rationale behind it?
There wasn't really. It was a situation where somebody kind of spoke out of turn. And this was, I guess, something that the IOC weren't exactly delighted with. Like, you have a World Athletics Championships next year, though, is the thing. And like, I don't want to say that athletics is the most important sport in the Olympics, but it's hugely important. And like, with a World Athletics Championships next year, perhaps they felt that 2022 would be the next kind of available time, if that's already sort of semi set in stone. So yeah, I don't know, but maybe 2 years is kind of like the maximum sort of window they can give themselves within reason. So like, my question, like, why have they given themselves 4 weeks? Like, I certainly hope that 4 weeks is a window rather than a target. I hope it's not a situation that they're sitting on their hands saying, well, let's give it this 4 weeks, see if this calms down over in Europe, rather than saying to themselves, right, 4 weeks should allow us enough time to logistically plan to actually postpone this thing.
Yeah, I mean, you assume it's a little bit of both, like hoping for some divine intervention at some level. The Racing Post this morning, they're back in the flat at Nace, and it's a column from David Jennings at the front there talking about that. Glittering Dubai World Cup meeting cancelled very late in the day as well. And their back page, lockdown in Australia puts remaining fixtures at risk. So that's the end of sport in Australia. The back page of the Telegraph sports section, sports to hold crisis talks on virus impact. That's players' union fear spike in mental health problems. Cases expected to rise due to wage cuts and job losses. Fellaini and two English clubs return positive tests. Marouane Fellaini and two English clubs at Portsmouth. Four players have contracted the disease, and Leighton Orient ordered their staff home following a positive test for one of their players. So it's literally everywhere at the moment. You've got Irish news for us, Owen?
Yeah, it's Mickey Hart echoing the calls for changes in behaviour to ease impact of COVID-19. He's been speaking to the Irish News. He says, we take our lifestyle for granted, we take our employment for granted, so we need to just think, yes, it will be a disruption. It will be asking questions of us to do things that we don't normally do. And then you've got that story as well. John Hartson thinks Rangers should concede the Premiership title to Celtic.
Yeah, we'll do a bit more on that a little bit later on for you. It's 4 minutes past eight this Monday morning here on OTBAM. Still got a packed show to come for you. Kelly Harrington, Joey Boland, Classic Game Club, and we're back with Alan Quinlan straight after these.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
This is OTB Sports Radio, Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
When you lose a big match like that, you have to soak that up. But to go into a dressing room and say you're celebrating to be disrespectful, I mean, who's Mourinho to talk about disrespect?
The best analysis of all the week's football from Ireland's number one football man.
Pogba's a social media star.
right? He appeals to the young people now. He does his dance. He has his hair and all that. That's all he's worried about, in my opinion. Not worried about being a great player, Nathan.
John Giles. Every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. OTB
AM. This is my personal favourite now because I always talk about it. I'm a big rugby nut and I absolutely adore my scrums. And this one, you actually got second place in the sports category at the World Press Photo Foundation Awards for this. So this is from the 2017 Lions Tour, and it's in portrait mode. So it's an incredibly long photo and quite narrow, but it is a scrum between the Lions and the New Zealand Maori, and just the steam rising up into the darkest of night skies. It's just absolutely fantastic to look at. I personally have always found scrums to be the most photogenic things in the world, because on those winter days, you always have those shots of the two packs coming together and the steam rising up off them. I've always thought they made for fantastic photos. But yeah, like I'd say that was a fantastic shot to get.
Yeah, it's one that'll probably... It'll last a lot longer than I will. I think people that's going into the archives. A bit of background on the award itself was it's the World Press Photo Awards, and in our field is probably the biggest accolade we can get. The only thing bigger is probably a Pulitzer Prize, and I don't think sport will ever fall into that category as much as we
scrum,
think.
Scrum certainly won't, anyway.
They certainly won't. And the thing with a scrum as well, 90%, I suppose, you actually don't see what's going on in there. You can't see what's happening in those scrums. So on the night, it was as you said, it was a midweek game, and it was the New Zealand or the British Irish Lions against the Maori All Blacks. And it was a really, really cold, wet night in Rotorua, and it was one of those games that was like, just get through it, because it was not an entertaining game. It was nothing very clean in it. I think the Lions had two tries that day. One was a penalty try, and then Itoji went over from close to the line. So as the game went on, you were just like, it wasn't producing great pictures, but at the same time, with the cold and the wet and the dampness, you knew there had to be a picture in the steam. So as the game went on, you were watching for when the scrum would come together. And whatever way, it just all came into place in the perfect place, because the strange thing about it, and that people don't realize what it is, there's actually no branding whatsoever in the picture. And like, there's nothing done to the picture. The picture is as pure as it was taken. So in this day and age of over-branded sports and everything like that, it's strange to see a picture with no branding in the background. The floodlights gave the contrast to light up the steam coming from the bodies as they came into the scrum. But it's one I'm incredibly proud of. And you touched on it there as well. You say about it being in portrait mode. The picture was photographed upright, and there was about four photographers in the same position shooting the exact same thing. So we all saw the picture, but all four people shot it differently. Wow. Some people shot it wide and cropped it afterwards. Some people shot it tight and cut out the steam. And I think what stood for me is, from the day I walked into Sportsfile, I remember Ray McManus saying to me, he says, the camera goes both ways, turn it the other way around, turn it upright. Is it compresses it. So if you shot that wide and cropped it in afterwards, you wouldn't have the compression and you wouldn't have had the impact that picture has. And I suppose that's why it stood out against so many other different variations of the same.
Steve McCarthy of Sportsfile speaking on Saturday afternoon on the Saturday panel with Neil Tracy there about a very famous photograph that he took, and it was absolutely beautiful. If you're listening to us on OTB Sports Radio, then get over to YouTube and actually get over to our social channels as well. You'll see them there. You can follow Stephen at Sportsfile Steve on Twitter as well. Alan Quillen, 10 minutes past 8 this morning here. Good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good morning, Ger. How are you?
I'm very well. How is isolation treating you?
Shockingly bad. it's not too bad. I suppose, look, it's tricky for everybody. It's for me, it's just getting used to it. I'm trying to get out and about and do a little bit. I went for a run yesterday. My legs were like two concrete blocks dragging them around the roads. My boy is keeping me fairly active with cycling and playing football and stuff, but it's challenging. I think it's sometimes you forget when you come back in and you're out and about for a bit of exercise, and you flick on the sports channels and it's historic sport you're watching. It's challenging to just get your head around it. I think I wake up every day and I think, what's going on? You know, you forget really sometimes, and but it is what it is. I think the most important thing is for people to do the right thing and try their best to do the right thing.
Yeah, it seems as if we're all having a little bit of difficulty with that. We're there for a run as well, and you kind of still see a lot of people in shops and they're standing beside each other, or took the kids out for a drive on Saturday and was out in Howth, and the queue wasn't as bad as it was on Sunday in the video that's done the rounds on viral. But like, we don't know how to queue in Ireland. We're just not great queuers.
Yeah, and it's not very complicated, is it, to try and understand keeping your distance and stuff like that. It's frustrating me a bit. I think I was down in Rathmines yesterday, popped into McDonald's, and I kid you not, there was three guys in their probably early 30s outside the door of McDonald's, had some food, and they were sharing one drink. I'm not joking you. Talk about, ludicrous actions, if you like, in the circumstances that are happening at the moment. They were sharing one drink. I turned back to the left of me, and there was three other adults there chatting, literally standing face to face, chatting with each other. So some people are not doing it, and they're probably going to. They're probably the ones that are going to cause more restrictions to be brought in. I think there will be more restrictions brought in about the social gatherings and stuff like that. I think going out to parks and walks and stuff like that, as long as you keep moving and keep your distance from people, it's fine. But, you know, unfortunately, some people are not adhering to that. I just saw this morning that the NRL in Australia have just shut down. It's literally made the decision about an hour ago. The rugby league there and the football was continuing there behind closed doors. The AFL was continuing behind closed doors. And you just think with sports people, these games, I was tracking the NRL at the weekend and watching some of it online. It's still not social distancing, is it, when you have 30 rugby players or whatever the number on the rugby league players, or AFL players out playing in a game? There's still a lot of close contact, and where those sports people go after the games is hard to know. It's a risk. So they've shut down in Australia. So I think there's going to be more shutdowns here, unfortunately, and we don't have any sport to watch.
No, the Australians, I think, had a pretty bad weekend. Bondi Beach was absolutely mobbed with people, and the cops had to come along and close it. So they've introduced the more severe stuff, and that's in the front page of the papers today as well, about more severe gatherings. Was it France who went to, you're allowed two people, and that's it, down from the 500 straight down to gatherings of more than two are now closed. And look, that's not going to be a great place for us to go to, but it might be absolutely necessary to...
Yeah, it is necessary, Ger. It is necessary, because I think it's infuriating to see people ignoring this. It's not that difficult to understand what social distancing is. And you know, if people meet in a group in a park and they stand back from each other, you can still have a conversation or a chat. So some people are just choosing to ignore it, and it's terrible, really.
Yeah, and it puts everybody else at risk as well. Look, let's talk about some other stuff as well to try and give ourselves a little bit of a distraction from this. We've been talking about what we're watching. We have a classic game club coming up, the typical Kenny, the draw match, the Hawkeye final from 2014. What are you watching? Are you sitting down and showing AJ some of your videos from your greatest days?
He looks at some stuff on YouTube, but he's not that impressed with me. He's more into Johnny Sexton and O'Gara and watching their matches over the years, dramatic drop goals and scores and tries, but not his father's, unfortunately. No, I'm not really watching a lot. I'm just skimming around. I was just chatting on breakfast this morning about the FA Cup, the classic FA Cup games. There was a few on at the weekend. My favourite was the Liverpool-West Ham game in 2006, the final in Cardiff, where Steven Gerrard gets the equaliser late on and Liverpool won on penalties. But probably my favourite rugby match that I played in was, aside from the finals, winning the two European Cup finals, was the Munster-Northampton game in 2012. or 2010, we won 12-9 in Thomond Park. It was a shocking game to watch, but it was kind of one that stands out for me. Paul O'Connell was sin-binned in the, I think, around the 60th minute by Roman Poit. I ended up going in second row with Dunica Ryan. He'd come on for Dunica O'Callaghan. They were killing us in the scrum all night. I ended up being in the second row with Dunica Ryan, and John de Villiers came in wing forward, and we pushed him off the scrum from the penalty that Roman Poit penalised Paul and sin-binned him. It was 5 yards out, and they were convinced they were going to score a try against us, and they had the put-in in the scrum, and we pushed them off it and won a penalty, cleared our lines. I wouldn't say it was my favourite match, but it was my favourite moment in a game because of the fact that our backs were to the wall so much, and as I said, they were putting us under all sorts of pressure in the scrum, and we beat them 12-9. We ended up meeting them then in the quarter. That was the last pool game. We ended up meeting them then in the quarter final back in Thomond Park, and we played a lot better in that game and beat them convincingly. But it's hard to know what to watch these days and where to look at sport. I'm not that into the horse racing. So there was racing in Thurles at the weekend. I flicked around and watched one or two races and the racing channel, but that was it.
Would John de Villiers have made a great number seven, like world class number seven?
It's hard to know. I think he was he was tall and had probably the frame for to have the ability to do that. But with a bit of coaching and training, yeah, it's different because when you play in the backs for so long and you kind of come up in underage rugby as a back, it's the transition in is obviously different. It's much more different. You're involved in so much more. You're right at the coal face of the contact all the time. But he had the physique he had the power and the pace probably to do something like that. I look back in on that scrum a couple of times, and he was always taking credit for the difference he made in the scrum. But he's not even scrummaging properly at the side of that scrum. He's really leaning on top of Marcus Horan and not really pushing too hard, but
it was the second rows, right? It was the second rows.
It was the two Tipperary lads in the second row, and the two superstars were off the field. The iconic Irish duo of O'Connell and O'Callaghan, who were mainstays in the Irish team, lines players, you name it, and a fella from Nean and Tipperary Town. We're kind of in the engine room there, so that was kind of my favourite moment playing for Munster, really, because there was an incredible amount of pride in that. But anyway, it was not many people notice or remember that game.
Well, you should stick it up on YouTube for us, or if there's a link to it, and we'll put it up and we'll make sure everybody watches that scrum. One last thing, Alan. I know in the past you've spoken about mental health issues and how important it is for us all to share and to talk. Have you got any advice for anybody at this time? Because I know this is definitely a big issue for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's not expert advice. It's probably just in my own way of doing things is trying to stay active, because essentially, you kind of feel like you're locked in jail, really, and that your freedom is taken away a little bit about not going where you want, when you want. I think the key to that is doing some movements, going for a walk, get out in nature, and if you're feeling a little bit down on yourself, have a chat with someone, because I think it certainly helps. But there's a great soothing in going out into nature and movement and exercise. It's proven to produce endorphins and make you feel a little bit better. Put on a little bit of music, go for a walk, a cycle, a run, and certainly that will kind of alleviate a little bit of stress or anxiety that's probably hanging around. But it just doesn't get rid of it there either. So lots of people have lots of problems and issues financially and lots of worries and fears. And I'm getting quite anxious. I'm a naturally anxious person anyway, and I'm getting pretty anxious, and my mood is very much up and down with this whole thing. But I do find, and I think right across the board, I don't think anyone will disagree with me, if you get moving and do a little bit of exercise and get out in nature, it certainly grounds you a little bit and hopefully will alleviate a little bit of that stress. It doesn't take away the worry, but it certainly helps you manage it.
No, exactly. That's all we can do at the moment. Alan, great stuff this morning. Thanks a million for joining us, and stay well.
Thanks.
It's Alan Quinlan there giving us some thoughts. Great advice to get out and do a bit of activity. We're going to bring you some help on that front, we hope, with Joey Boland a little bit later on. We're going to introduce a new daily feature called Off the Couch, which is aimed at getting those endorphins flowing. So we'll get into that in a couple of minutes' time. I want to bring you our next guest now, though. Kelly Harrington joins us. He's just returned from London from the Boxing Olympic qualifiers. Kelly, you didn't get to fight, but you were due to fight. Good morning to you. How are you doing?
Morning. Not doing too bad. Like everybody else, I suppose. Hanging in there.
You didn't get to fight. What actually happened, and how close were you to fighting?
So we were out there for, it was a week, and the draw had been done, and I got seated. I didn't even watch it because I never do watch the draw, but I was due to box on Tuesday. And on the Monday, we were all down and we were doing our sweat session, you know, just to make the weight down for Tuesday morning. So finished the session and we were on the way back, and then we just got news saying that they were pulling the plug on the tournament after the evening session, which we had two boxers boxing in there. So we had to kind of keep a hush-hush because we still had two lads in the competition, like in the evening time, so we didn't want them finding out and getting disheartened and playing anything on their fight, you know, like on their performance. But yeah, it was quite annoying because you went over in the first place, like the competition could have been pulled at the start. You hold them away for a week and all the training and preparation that goes in, but I suppose safety first.
Safety the previous week would have been safety first. Like, so what we were looking at the pictures, and there was no real social distancing at that point. The message certainly in England hadn't come down. Everybody should be standing apart. And look, it's sure, Jesus, you look at the pictures at the weekend of the tube and really in the markets, people are queuing up each other's backside. So, like, what was it actually like for you guys, knowing, coming from here where the messaging had been a bit clearer the previous week, heading over to England going, not sure that they're doing the same thing that we're doing?
Yeah, well, you see, when we actually only came back from Italy as well. So we had to come back from a training camp in Italy early because of the outbreak in Italy. So we came back and then we're back out in the institute training and all the, like, it was everything about washing your hands, keeping the distance. Then they start checking the temperatures just before we flew out to London. So the shit hadn't hit the fan as such before we went. And then when we got to London, then like we were hearing all about back home and about how things were crazy, but we weren't here, so we didn't really know. And over in London, it was like nothing was actually. It was like nothing was happening because everybody the Brits were all so close and it didn't really look like anyone was taking any correct measures over there. But we were, as a team, we were keeping our distance from anybody outside of the sport, from trying to stay away from other teams and stuff, like, which is quite hard because you're in one building, you've, like, I don't know, there was over 40 nations there. Like, it's just unbelievable. Like, we were all quite surprised that the tournament was going ahead anyways.
Yeah. And in the middle of all this, you're trying to qualify for the Olympic Games, which is your full-time job, essentially. Like, you know, obviously there's a global pandemic and we all have to keep that in context, but this has been your life for the last 3 or 4 or 5. It's essentially been your entire sports career is coming down to trying to qualify for these Olympic Games, and the tournament is happening and you're not even sure it's supposed to be happening. So what was your mindset like?
To be honest with you, it was very, very different to what it would normally be. Because all I was thinking about was, like, is it going to be pulled? Is it not going to be pulled? And, like, you see people saying, oh, all you have to do is focus on the boxing. It's very hard to do that when you're also worrying about, like, your family and stuff at home, and is everyone okay at home, and I hope they're keeping distance from people. I hope, like, my brothers are staying in and I hope they're doing what they're told. You know, like, it's tough. Like, it's tough for everybody, but it's tough when you're getting ready for a fight. Like, and all you're thinking about is, Jesus, like, is everyone okay at home? Is, you know, like, it was just very, very different.
And look, I think that's the thing. You actually have no choice because this is your job. You have to go and try and qualify for the Olympics. When actually, probably the right thing for everybody to do was to say, well, we're just going to wait and see what happens. But you didn't have that choice.
Yeah, we didn't. No. We just went out, and like there was talk of when we were out there that they were going to run it like, say, a box every day and get it done and over it really quickly. But that never happened. I would have loved it if that had happened, because I would have got it done and over with, and we wouldn't be, you know, like we would have had more people qualify or maybe not qualify. I don't know, but one way or another would have been a weight off our shoulders, really.
Yeah, and were you fitting well? You were confident heading into it that you were going to qualify anyway.
Yeah, I was fitting well. I'll never say I was going to win. I was going to qualify, because that's not the type of person that I am. It's a level playing field until you get in there. Anything can happen on the day, really. But I was fit and I was well, and I was starting to feel really sharp. So, yeah.
Kelly, the Canadians have pulled their athletes from the games, and the organisers are saying we need 4 weeks to decide whether or not the games are going ahead. Do you think the games should go ahead?
I think they should be postponed. I don't think they should be cancelled. I just think they need to make a call on that sooner rather than later, because it's bad enough that we're stuck in our houses, but now we're stuck in our houses and we're like trying to get training in, and the correct training, it's kind of crazy. And some athletes, it's really tough for athletes trying to, how can you fit the correct training in around all these restrictions?
Yeah. Owen, you want to come in there?
Yeah, Kelly, do you think that there is enough of credence put into what the athletes are actually thinking at the moment? Because it certainly seems to me that what the IOC are doing is to sort of ensure that they will be able to ensure that the financial benefits from holding an Olympic Games will be maintained by pushing it back a couple of months or potentially a year or two. But to me, it seems that the athletes are the most important ones. And I kind of felt in the tournament in London recently, in the qualifying tournament, that the athletes' rights and the athletes' health was kind of secondary to everything else.
Jesus, I don't know. I can't answer that. All I know is that I hope it does get postponed. Athletes come first, people come first, and there's no point in going out and going to the Olympics and having no one to celebrate it. and coming back and being brown bread then a few weeks later because you're catching a virus out there. So.
It's a fair point, Kelly. The other thing that you were tweeting about last night was video of the queue for the fish and chips in Howth. That was taken on Sunday. Your tweet was, if you're one of the Muppets standing in the queue in Howth for fish and chips today, you deserve to be slapped repeatedly. Absolute tools. Would I actually love to go buy a millie out of it with eggs or something?
I don't understand that. We're not we haven't run out of food or anything. Why are they doing that? Why are they queuing up for fish and chips like that and doing silly things? They're just absolute idiots.
Why do you think it is? Why do you think people don't fully yet understand that we could be in a situation which is the same as every other country has been in, where the hospitals are completely overwhelmed because people didn't stay at home?
Why do I think they're all queuing out there? Probably the hard man syndrome or something. I don't know. Gobshites. It's just crazy. There's nurses and doctors out there and they're putting their own lives at risk while you have these idiots in doing stupid, simple things like that. We're being asked just to be safe, to be cautious, to stay in your house. Don't spread it if you have it. There's a possibility I could have it. I'm not saying I have. I don't. Hopefully not. But I'm not going out. I'm not risking it. I'm not going to risk giving it to someone else who could possibly die from it. It's just crazy.
You're in self-isolation since you came home from London. Is that right?
Well, it's quarantine. But what I did realise is, when you have to start isolating yourself and start taking people out of your normal life, it's actually, as an athlete, you just realise that you kind of do that anyway. So the only thing I'm really not is seeing my family, and I'm not able to go to the shops or anything. But
and
it's not as bad. It's kind of a normal thing anyways for every athlete. We just don't get to see our families now.
Right. And so that's going to last a couple of weeks until you're 14 days clear of coming back from London. Is that it?
Yeah, so 7 days in now, another 7 days to go, and even at that, then you have to take all the the correct measures. You can't be going around dilly-dallying. Like, quarantine is like, do what you have to do with the people living under your own roof, and that's it. Outside of that, don't be going and visiting your granny and your cousin and, oh, that's only my neighbour across the road, so I can go in for a cup of tea. No, you can't. Like, you don't know where your neighbour's after being. You don't know where their kids are after being. Like, people don't get it. Like,
that's the thing. I still don't know why people don't get it. Like, all of my WhatsApp groups are fairly anxious and very concerned and absolutely on lockdown, and organise them to meet up through Skype or whatever. It still doesn't seem though as if everybody is at that level yet where they've decided, oh, this actually does impact me.
Yeah, and I don't, you know what, like, it'll probably take a lockdown for people to realise that, you know, which is terrible. Like, and then we'll have all the people coming out and whinging, oh, it's terrible, the country's gone into lockdown and all. Well, maybe if you'd done the right things, then the country wouldn't have to do it. We wouldn't be forced to do it, you know, like, just do it, do the right thing.
Yeah.
It's simple, like, people just don't get it.
It does seem very simple, all right.
Selfish people will always be selfish.
Well, that's the thing, and maybe the selfish gene is the one that we've been very focused on as a race for the last 100 years, and who knows, maybe this is a bit of engineering going on to try and knock that out of us. Can I just ask you about your own, so what happens if the Olympics do get postponed? Say it's a year or 2 years, does that change your plans about, like, would you think about going professional or any of that kind of stuff? Is any of that part of your mindset at the moment? It's like, this was my time. I had everything locked and loaded and ready to go for this summer 2020. Does that change who you are as a person or any of that kind of stuff?
No, like, not really. Like, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm happy enough doing what I'm doing. We're still, like, we've been sent our programs. We've been sent everything that we need. I know we're on lockdown, but like, we're still doing our training in the house, out in the back garden. So we just keep going, keep moving forward. Hopefully there'll be a call on it, and I'll just make a decision then after that. But no decisions on turning professional yet or anything. You know, just have to wait and see what happens. Really, everyone's in the same boat. You know, it's not just like as Team Ireland that we're in this boat, but like the whole world is in this. If we're all on a sinking ship together.
Yeah, and I think that actually helps a little bit with the anxiety that everybody feels, is that, like, you flick on the news and certainly too much news is certainly not great for everybody's mental health at the moment, but at least you do realise that this is the same situation right around the world, and in every country, and every athlete is undergoing the same thing that you're going, and the rest of the world is too. So one last question there. You said as an athlete, you know, you're kind of used to being very solitary at the best of times. Does that mean you've got any tips for us about what we should all be doing with our extra time? Are you like a box set expert? Are you good at putting in time?
Well, like, when I say that, like, we could be away, and like, we'd spend most of our time in the room anyways, in the hotel room, and just chatting away and scrolling. But there's too much scrolling going on now, because it's just crazy, and there's too much negativity on social media as well at the moment. So at the moment, I'm just like doing a little bit of meditation in the morning, doing some workouts. I'm actually posted a couple on my Facebook page there. One yesterday morning, had a few people join in on that. So just trying to do little things and try and get people involved in it as well, because, like I said, we're all in the one boat and we have to reach out. A social circle, and that's social media, really.
Yeah, for sure. Owen?
Just for people who haven't seen it, Kelly, what are those workouts? What is your regime, even in the back garden, for anybody who's looking for a bit of a challenge?
Well, yesterday I done a boxing workout with no equipment, because no, like, not every household's going to have equipment. So I just done that yesterday morning, and it was nice and easy. It was only 30 minutes. So yeah, if you want to go on and have a look, there's the Kelly Harrington Boxer on my Facebook page there. If anyone wants to have a look, you can go on and do it, if you can understand me.
No problems on that score, Kelly. Great to have you on this morning. Stay well, and thanks a million for taking the call.
Thanks a million. Stay safe, everybody.
It's Kelly Harrington with some good advice. Stay home. It's not that hard. Keep your distance. It's not that hard. That seems to be the theme of the show this morning. I mean, I don't know if all your WhatsApp groups, Owen, are the same as mine, but certainly most of my friends seem to be staying at home and happy enough to stay at home.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the case. I think people accept that there have been times of hardship in this country in the past, and the solution hasn't always been as simple as staying at home and closing your doors and not going to speak to people. Unfortunately, there will be a legacy of kind of greater hardship. But right now, the message is clear and it is quite simple. You know what to do to try and arrest this whole thing. So thankfully, it is one dimensional on that front. But like, there is clearly a large swathe of people who haven't been communicated to correctly, or perhaps it is impossible to communicate to certain groups of people correctly either, and it just doesn't seem that it's one demographic. Like you can look at various different videos across different countries as to people who are refusing to respect the message, which is to stay indoors, and you can't really pin it down to just young people or just parents or just whatever it is. It seems to be a large collection of people.
Hard man syndrome, Kelly Harrington called it there, which I thought was a good way of putting it. It's 8:36 this morning. Classic Game Club is still to come. Up next, though, we're going to launch Off the Couch. It's our new lunchtime workout show here on Off the Ball. Later on this week, Andy Dunn's going to do one for us. Robbie Cannon, Shane Lowry's trainer, is going to bring us their regimes. Dublin hurler Joey Boland is launching the series for us next. But it turns out Kelly Harrington isn't the only Harrington who's putting videos together. Have a look at this.
This drill, I often see in golf, most amateur golfers, you know, they try and hit the golf ball further, or they want to hit the golf ball further by turning, say, resisting the hips and turning the shoulders. That only works for elite golfers to control the golf ball. This is the drill I would use for you. Line up a few balls, and at about 70-80%, just go down the line. Not really too worried about strike. Just hit a nice. And as you can see, my hands and arms are going to be doing all the work in that movement. Another alternative to that is, again, just do a really, really short half swing, like so. And again, that will get your hands and arms driving.
The genius of Conor Sketch is obviously adding to the aural pleasure that you got from listening or watching Pádraig Harrington's video. That's done over 1 million views on Twitter alone. So Conor is the man, and keeping us all entertained at this time in human history. It's 8:38 this morning. Off the Couch is our new fitness series to help us all stay fit, or in some of our cases, to get fit during this period of social isolation. Some of Ireland's leading trainers, physios, fitness experts, sports people and other friends of the show are going to be sharing their top tips in straight to the point and easy to use videos, which are going to go live across our social channels every day at lunchtime. First up is former Dublin hurler and founder of Sports Physio Ireland, Joey Boland. Joey, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Yeah, what's this actually like for you? I mean, obviously, it's a business challenge, as well as it being like a giant mental and social challenge. But from actually just getting information to people who are clients and customers and potentially new people who want to get some help in this hour of need, what's it like for you so far?
Yeah, it was very difficult. We decided last Sunday, so Sunday week ago, to close the doors. We just didn't think that it was the right, we weren't told to close. It probably wasn't the right thing to do, to be bringing clients in for physiotherapy or for personal training. So the challenge was really get all the infrastructure in place on site to be able to actually do video calls and to continue helping our clients, you know, over the next possibly 2, 3, 4 months.
Yeah, that's the thing. No one really knows how long this is going to go on. So how do you do physio from a remote location?
Yeah, so it's a lot of people are asking that, and we've actually found that it's working quite well. So basically what will happen is, say if you're at home and you've got a sore back, you contact us, you book an appointment, and what we will actually get you to do is to video yourself doing maybe 3 or 4 or 5 different movements before our session, send the video on, and then we'll analyze it and share our screen with you during the video call and actually point out, you know, what's wrong, how you're going to manage it, and then we'll prepare a pre-planned exercise routine and rehab plan that, again, we'll share our screen with you and pause it during, let's say, exercise one is stretch your hip, exercise two is foam roll, exercise three is work on your upper back. And from feedback, our clients are saying that they're actually getting much more involved in their rehab because they actually have to think a bit more and do it themselves. So it seems to be going well to date anyway.
And sorry, are most of your clients athletes already, or is it actually a mix of kind of Joe Public and athletes?
Yeah, so we're based here in Dublin too. So a lot of our clients, let's say 70% of our clients, are office workers who like to be active, who like to hike on the weekends, who like to go for cycles, who like to jog. We also look after the Dublin hurlers in the clinic and Bective Rangers and one or two Nafina senior hurlers. So we've got a nice mix between kind of elite athletes and, you know, your Joe Public kind of person who wants to keep fit and stay injury free.
We're just showing some B-roll here of what people can expect this afternoon at lunchtime. What have you done for us?
Yeah, so what we've done is we created just five basic exercises that you can do at home. And they're kind of hitting the body in every way, and you don't need any weight. If you have weight, you can add them in. So we're doing a squat with a twist. So it's for your kind of glute strength and your upper back. Huge issue that people are going to have now is they're going to be stiff from sitting at home, and we're not as active as we can be. So that's why we're doing this. The lunge one is just the single leg stuff where you're stepping forward, stepping back. We're doing a hip mobility one with a push-up. That's the third exercise. And then we're doing an active plank where you're twisting side to side. Again, trying to keep the core as active as possible while we're at home. And then the last one is a hamstring stretch with a glute activation bridge. Basically, I broke it into five exercises. If you're using this as a warm-up before you go for your run, it's actually perfect. You only do two rounds. But if you want to use it as actually an exercise circuit in itself at home, you just do five rounds. It's very simple and straightforward, and it's online there, and there's an explanation behind every video.
You're in decent shape. Are you, like, can you compare and contrast how fit you are now versus how fit you were when you were a senior intercounty hurler?
I'm probably 40% fit to what I used to be.
Right.
Really, you know, like, you just can't match the... Like, I'm not playing at all at this stage, and no matter what training you do, that intensity of intercounty training Tuesday, Thursday, and a 70, 75, 80-minute match on the weekend, there's nothing like it. Like, you just can't keep that level of fitness up, you know, no matter what you do.
I saw somebody, it might have been Gary Breen, talking about at the end of the year for footballers, you'd be surprised to find out how many of them actually get sick at the end of the season because their immune system is run down.
Yeah.
I had never thought of that before. Were you well when you were an intercounty hurler, or were you more prone to catching colds and general sniffles because you are kind of stretching the body to its limits?
Do you know, and I was looking back over my career, and I think I got a bad dose of the flu around March, between March and April every year, without a doubt, because you would have gone from the Christmas period and your body fat would shoot down by 10%. Through January, February, and the intensity of the training is so high, and you're so on the ball with everything, your nutrition. And, you know, I remember, like, when you're at your peak, you kind of can look a little bit gaunt and a little bit sick, you know, in order to get your body fat down to the level that's required to get around the pitch for 70, 80 minutes. So, yeah, I remember I was very susceptible to getting the flu.
Yeah, which is, I think, not something that people would have thought about. It's kind of ironic that the fittest people are quite susceptible to picking up colds and flus because they are literally stretching the body as far as it's going to go. So this isn't just for elite athletes. That's the other thing that we want to get across here, that for those of us who are maybe, you know, going to be easing our way into this off-the-couch challenge, do two reps of it and see how far we can get.
Exactly, yeah. So do two reps of it, see how far you get. But the key thing here, what I would advise people to do is, like, simply, if you're at home and this is an opportunity for you to actually do something, you know, either learn online academically or to, you know, fix that lower back that's been at you for a long period of time or kind of get fit. So, like, what I would suggest is buy yourself a whiteboard. Simply write down four different pillars that we go by. Like, what are you going to do today regarding food? What are you going to do last night and tonight regarding sleep? Like, you need to get, like, this is a chance for us to catch up on our sleep. If, you know, if we're working and we're busy and we're commuting, a lot of us are only getting 5 or 6 hours of sleep, and that has a massive effect on your mood, your energy, and your actual ability to do stuff like this. The third point that I would suggest is water. Exactly how much water are you going to be drinking? You're kind of 1.5, 2 litres during the day. And then at the end of the whiteboard, you just schedule in time for your exercise and create a designated area in your house. All you need is a mat, and be creative with, you know, a pots and pans or whatever you need to be. And if you get a bit of structure, it'll be fine. If you don't have structure, all of the above will just kind of merge into one kind of long day of non-productivity, you know?
Yeah. There was a tweet that went viral at the weekend. It was somebody's day was wake up 9 o'clock, scroll till 2 a.m., repeat, and it had like 500,000 likes. You're kind of like, okay, I understand that, because you can see how easy it is for that just to happen. But a little bit of structure is a great idea. Joey, thanks a million for joining us, and best of luck with everything. Sports Physio Ireland, if anybody wants any individual consultations, you're open for business. Oh, we lost Joey there, yeah. So he is definitely, but so the Off the Couch today live. And just to let you know, this is the start of something great, because tomorrow, the first OTB Kids Takeover is happening this week. We're giving the stuck-at-home kids of Ireland a chance to interview some of the biggest stars in Irish sport, and we're starting with none other than Brian O'Driscoll. So you can ask him anything, from what pyjamas he wears to what age is it acceptable to wear highlights in your hair. We're going to get the answer to these questions, the questions that maybe all of us ever wanted to ask, but are now using the Children of Ireland to do it instead. So all you got to do is video your kids asking the question, get them to introduce themselves first, and then WhatsApp it to 087 9180 180. That's 087 9180 180. Ideally, the videos are in landscape mode, so don't film them like that. Film them like that. Get the kid to introduce themselves, ask the question, and we'll be recording with Brian on Tuesday, so that's tomorrow. So do please get them into us as soon as possible. It is 8:47 this morning here on OTB AM. Up next, we're getting into the Classic Game Club with John Duggan, joining us to look back on the drawn 2014 All-Ireland Hurling Final between Tipperary and Kilkenny. It's the Hawkeye Final. Back after this.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
OTB Sports Radio. Football never stops, and neither do we.
Don't shoot.
Oh, he dinked it.
The Football Show is the only place to get the best analysis.
We've tried this way, and we've been trying it for a long time, and it's just active process now.
Best interviews.
There was talk that you used to go commando when you played, and
Yeah, I did. I never wore pants. Still don't wear pants.
And best opinions on all things from across the pond and here in Ireland. Live every night from 9 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
Listen all the time.
Get OTB Sports Radio online at offtheball.com/radio or on your phone by downloading the Go Loud app. Here at OTB, we want to help flatten the curve. We want to slow down the spread. So make sure to wash your hands for at least 20 seconds. So here's 20 seconds of Giles Gold. When John stops talking, you're done.
Well, I think he should keep his mouth shut and have more respect for the opposition when he plays against them. And look at himself. If he was such a great player, was able to do all the things that he's talking to other people not doing, he wouldn't be on the bench, he'd be out there playing. Obviously after the Munich Air disaster, it was thrust on Bobby, and there was an awful lot of pressure on Bobby. He was carrying the team, and he handled himself brilliantly, and he played unbelievably.
And remember, avoid touching your face, cough or sneeze into your elbow, and protect those most vulnerable. So please stay safe from everybody here at Off the Ball.
OTB AM.
So then, the scene is set. Whether you are watching in Christchurch or Coot Hill, Seattle or Skibbereen, you are very welcome to the final of the 127th All-Ireland Hurling Championship.
Go!
out as far as John O'Dwyer. And John O'Dwyer strike this one inch perfect, and that's straight over for his sixth. And they're still alive. There's still a pulse. Does any team deserve to lose it?
I don't think so.
One or more. All heart and determination. O'Dwyer, tight angle. He's got it. He's nailed it. Seventh. The teams are level.
Sides are level.
Come on.
Sides are level. Incredible over the last couple of minutes.
Brian Hogan. Will he be the hero? Hogan goes in, shouldered by Paddy Maher. And it's a free to Tipperary.
I think it was hit with a fair shoulder.
It's John O'Dwyer. Bubbles, they all call him.
I think he has the distance.
Strikes it high. He's put it on a wide. No. They're not sure. It's going for Hawkeye.
He has it. Has he? Oh. No, he hasn't. Oh. Ball is wide. Oh. And John Bubbles O'Dwyer. Oh,
that's not. The umpire's calling again for Hawkeye. The same umpire. This is the third time today.
So Hawkeye's got to determine whether that's a hit or a miss. Is it a score for Tip?
Right.
It's wide. It's wide.
The drama, if you're a script writer, well, whoever wrote the script for the 2014 All-Ireland, well, God bless you, because you're giving us a game that we will never forget. And ladies and gentlemen, from Ireland, from all over the world, the full-time whistle is blown, and it is another draw.
Yep, you are welcome along to the Classic Game Club, the show where we go back and watch epic sports events from the past. This is like a book club, except for classic games. As you've heard there on this week's edition, we're looking back at the 2014 drawn All Ireland final between Kilkenny and Tipperary. The Hawkeye final, really. Everybody knows what you're talking about when you say the Hawkeye final. Ger is still with us. John Duggan, you're there. Good morning.
Owen, Ger, good morning.
You've often said this is the best sporting event you've ever been at, or at least the best hurling game you've ever seen.
Best hurling game I've ever seen, Owen, and it's funny that I would describe it as hurling is the definition of freedom, and at a very worrying time when public health is the priority and our freedom is a bit different to what it normally is. I think that we really appreciate even watching the game back and the days that are going to come when we're going to have these kind of hurling matches again. So I just was even when I was watching the game last night, I was in the middle of like, going, hit it. Watching a YouTube replay of a hurling match from 2014. And I was there on the day. I was reporting for Today FM on the game. And to have an organisation that would have been described maybe as behind the times for many years and that had a timekeeping issue in 1998 with the Clare Offaly game that had to be just replayed because the time was wrong, to see it go to technology and to see 82,000 people look at a screen to see how the All-Ireland would be decided between Kilkenny and Tipperary after 54 scores in the game was just incredible.
What have you got? You've got your match ticket from today, I think. Have you got any other memorabilia?
Well, behind me, I've got a signed Kilkenny jersey because at the time of Today FM, we were doing this competition called the 15 for 15. We were trying to get the listeners to identify the best 15 hurlers of the last 15 years. So we were intending on holding the ceremony the Friday after the All-Ireland final. And it involved, obviously, some Kilkenny players like Tommy Walsh, like JJ Delaney, that were in the team that had been picked. And I would never in a million years would have expected another draw because the previous 2 years had been draws and there hadn't been a draw until 2012, since 1959. So understandably, the Kilkenny players weren't at the lunch that obviously we're now training for a replay. But then a few weeks later, unexpectedly, in the post, and Derek Ling, I think, had a lot to do with this, and I always found Derek a great fella. They sent in a signed jersey to me from the whole panel, and Brian Cody and Henry Shefflin and everybody. It was a lovely touch, and I still have it today. And obviously, I'm not going to wear it because I'm a Clare hurling fan, but it's behind me on the wall here at home.
Ger, where were you for this?
Definitely at the game. I'm pretty sure I wasn't working. I'm pretty sure I watched this game with my folks. That's my recollection of it. I was working for the replay because I remember being in the press box for that and going down and interviewing Jackie Tyrrell afterwards. And the difference, I mean, so we've obviously talked a good bit about the difference between these two games and how the first day the Tip forwards completely bamboozled the Kilkenny defence, and the second day, the Kilkenny defence is completely different, and they have a completely different mindset where they go out and they go man to man. So they play zonal in that first game, and that's why, if you're listening to Michael Dygan's commentary, he's constantly talking about the changes that the tip forwards are making and how they were just in Kilkenny's heads because they absolutely ripped them apart. Like, the amount of goal chances that Tipperary created but didn't actually take is off the charts when you consider this is a defence which is one of the greatest defences of all time, and these players are still close enough to their peak. But I remember interviewing Jackie on the pitch the next for the second game, and his team name in our Dynasty Fantasy League is called Shutdown Corner. Which is obviously because he's a corner, you know, quarterback, and I was like, "You weren't watching Shutdown Corner last week," and he laughed. So that was my recollection. I did that for a bet. I'm not lying.
At least you got a laugh out of it. That is one of the most striking things about this is how to actually follow Dignan and what he's saying constantly throughout this commentary. It is unbelievably frantic in terms of all the changes that happened mid-game. Like, even at one point, Jerick Hanning is like, well, try and follow that. If you're not at the game, like, in fairness to him, Dignan does such a good job of trying to actually paint a picture of what is going on outside of shot. But I'd say, John, even being there, trying to follow the matchups, trying to follow what's actually going on was insane.
Yeah, because the way I kind of approach a hurling match and I'm reporting on it, I draw on a kind of a ruled margin fool's cap, a line down the centre, and I've got one team on the left, one team on the right, and then I just have the amount of scores, like 1.0, 1 point, how many wides, etc. And it was just trying to keep up and trying to, because you think, oh, okay, the incidents in the first half will be something that would normally maybe fit an entire game. Like in 1995, Clare beat Offaly by 113 to 2-8. At halftime in this final, it was Tipperary 113, Kilkenny 111. And it's just trying to keep it even on top of that was mad. And I just remember during watching it, I'm going, this is breathtaking, because every time Richie Hogan and John O'Dwyer from either side got the ball, it was over the bar like lightning. The game had a Niagara Falls flow. It was just end to end. It was just incredible. And what I will always say about the game is there was no wides between the 44th and the 72nd minute when John O'Dwyer, Bubbles O'Dwyer's attempt from 97 metres just missed. And that just showed to me how incredibly the quality of the match.
We want to get into a few of the different categories that we do here in the Classic Game Club. And I dare say moment of the match is going to take us quite some time. So before we get into that, just to get through the context of this game, the full picture before we get into it, really, I think there's no question that you had in 2014 the two best teams in the country. And it was the two of them ahead of the pack by a bit of a distance, despite the fact of what we'd seen in 2013. Obviously, an incredible year of hurling. Clare prevailing. Perhaps an opinion out there that we had this new powerhouse, a young Clare team, ready to dominate hurling. Not to be the case. We saw this early doors in 2014. League final, another unbelievable game between Kilkenny and Tip. That's the one that goes to extra time. Kilkenny edged them in the end in that one. Come to summertime then, Kilkenny in full flow, really. They win Leinster. They hammer Dublin in the provincial decider. But it's not all plain sailing for Tipperary, if you'll remember. They lost on their first day out at home at Semple Stadium against Limerick. They go down to Tipperary and actually beat them. But it kind of launches a bit of a backlash. Tipperary come through the qualifiers. They beat Galway in that July cracker, 325 to 413. Then Offaly go by the wayside. Dublin are swatted aside pretty easily. And Cork are beaten. And Tip are back in the All-Ireland. Kilkenny then, it's that game in the rain against Limerick, which I'm sure we'll all remember in 2014, which gets them back to the All-Ireland. Just to go through the teams for anybody who might have been watching this game. Kilkenny, there was a bit of a debate around goalkeepers for both sides. Kilkenny went for Owen Murphy in goal on the day. A full backline of Paul Murphy, JJ Delaney and Jackie Tyrrell. Joey Holden, Brian Hogan and Killian Buckley were their halfbacks. And then in midfield, they started with Richie Hogan and Conor Fogarty. Like a pivotal moment then in the second half would be Richie Hogan moving to half forward. Michael Fennelly was wearing the 10 jersey, but of course he would move back to midfield eventually. Colin Fennelly and TJ Reid, the other half forwards. Walter Walsh, Richie Power and Owen Larkin made up the full forward line. Then for Tipperary on the day, it was Darren Gleeson between the sticks, Kyle Barrett, Padraig Maher and Paddy Stapleton, their full back line. Captain Brendan Maher lined out at halfback alongside James Barry and Kieran Bergen, with Shane McGrath and James Woodlock in midfield. You then had a half forward line of Garrod Ryan, Bonner Maher and John Bubbles O'Dwyer, and then Noel McGrath, Seamus Callanan and Lara Corbett in the full forward line. Like, it's an unbelievable array of talents here. Like, Jerry, you say it's a lot of these players from the golden era of Kilkenny still in their pomp, and I guess you're coming off the back of a great Tipperary team as well. I just think it's the perfect blend between the two, where you have the likes of Corbett and Callanan both dovetailing beautifully with each other in terms of form and in terms of talent at this moment.
Yeah, Jason Ford comes off the bench like as he must have been a child at that point. First touch straight over the bar from like 100 metres out. You're like, what the hell? Like, and he was the fourth sub, I think, used. Maybe the third sub used. But I want to talk about Richie Power. Was the game against Limerick, the semi-final, was that a yeah. Richie Power opus as well? Was he sensational that day? Did he score two goals in the rain? I can look that up. But I thought, watching it, that there was nobody in world sports that reminded me of that Richie Power performance more than Leo Messi, where he's not running. All around him there's chaos, and Richie Power would stop. The game would continue and the ball would come to him in some instances. And I just thought the first goal that he scores is like, oh, it's just a little tap-in, but it's a sensational bit of nuance and understanding of space and where the goalkeeper is. And you see several other players get in one-on-one on the goalkeeper, and the goalkeeper comes and kills them or cleans them out or makes a save with a hand, but not when it's Richie Power. He's like, I know exactly what you're going to do. I can see you coming towards me here, and I'm just going to drop the shoulder and tap it in. Like, There was another, the ball that he plays to himself for the second goal is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm just going to tap this down to myself, to the only space that I know that nobody else is going to be here. And then the finish was glorious as well. So
it's interesting, like, I've made the exact same comparison. I've got Lionel Messi written down on my sheet here, but it's more Messi and Suarez from that first goal. And I don't even know what the specific comparison is. Like, it's not like a big man up front like TJ Reid who wins the ball for that first goal. It's just the tic-tacking between a front two, and TJ Reid's hand pass for that first goal is actually unbelievable, because he's got three tip men around him, and somehow he manages to get a limb free and get the ball through to Richie Power, who dinks the ball over Gleeson and into the back of the net. Like, we can get into our moments of the match now, because that up for me is right up there, that Kilkenny opening goal. I just think I totally forgot how great it was. And I think even in commentary, there's not an instantaneous appreciation for how amazing this is or what they've just seen. Like, I think the first Tipperary goal is unbelievable. The second Tipperary goal is unbelievable. Richie Power's second goal is amazing. That we'd almost kind of got to this level where everything we were seeing seemed normal, but it was anything but normal. It was utterly extraordinary. And I just thought Richie Power was amazing on this occasion.
Well, he threaded the needle, TJ Reid, and that was, it really came at a critical time, because Kilkenny were on the rack before that goal. Bonner Maher had put it in the net, and Tipperary had their tails up. And when Tipperary as a team, as we've just seen in the last All-Ireland, play like that, they can be very hard to stop. So the goal came at exactly the right time. And it was an amazing hand pass from TJ Reid to Richie Power. And to me, goals won the All-Ireland that year for Kilkenny. They got two in the semi-final against Limerick, who didn't score a goal. They got three in the final against Tipperary, who had more possession and more scores from play. And then they got another two, Richie and John Power, in the replay. And it's funny, because we all, you know, think about these things and watch these things, and then, well, that looks like Messi or Suarez. And even when I was looking at the TJ Reid goal at the start of the second half, I was thinking of Gerd Müller in 1974 for West Germany, that he completely turned, and then he wrong-footed everybody and then just swept it into the net. And that, once again, killed Tipperary's momentum. Tipperary had Big Mo going into the second half, 2-point lead, first attack of the second half, back of the net, and Kilkenny are ahead. And that is why Kilkenny were the Manchester United, they were the Germans of hurling, that they always, at the right time, went for the jugular, and they had an array of people could to do it. It'd be Owen Larkin one day, Colin Fennelly another day, Richie Power on this day, TJ Reid. And that's why, to me, they won the All-Ireland that year they should not have won.
I really wanted that Tipperary team to win an All-Ireland, because I just thought that what their manager was trying to do was so different and brilliant. And I thought Eamon O'Shea, like, it was kind of like one of those, it's the last ring for, it might have changed the way everybody thought about forward play. And just his ability to coax that performance from Lahr at that stage of Lahr's career was absolutely sensational. But let's not forget that Tipperary missed two penalties, and the Tipperary got two penalties because of two professional fouls from the defenders in this Kilkenny setup, who are absolutely on the outer limit of what is allowed and what's not allowed, and they're just backing themselves because they know they've got Richie Hogan and TJ Reid to go in and stand on the goal line. It's like they fully understand exactly what the rules are. Dignan references it after the second penalty save. He's like, look, this is going to reignite the debate about what's right and what's wrong when it comes to having three lads on the line for a penalty. When you look back at it, you're like, what? How did that happen?
Mm. And in fairness, they're not, the first penalty in particular is poor. Like, you're almost better off taking your points at this stage of hurling. Well, and
yes, at that stage, it would have been a six-point lead and you wouldn't have missed a penalty. If he'd stood up and tapped it over the bar, it would have been like, yeah, come on. But like, you can see if you're Callan as well, you're Seamus Callan, you're going to, yeah, I am going to score this.
Yeah, like we'll get into the trends in a moment, but like that was the summer of the Anthony Nash rule. Like this was very en vogue that you would have two penalties in an All-Ireland. And in a game, John, I'm sure you'll correct me on the statistics here or give me the statistic here, but the lack of freeze throughout the entire thing. Like you talk about the accuracy from play, but like the vast majority of these scores, way above average, would come from play. There wasn't actually a lot of fouling, except when Kilkenny needed to, except when they needed to drag the man down. But like, were either of these actual penalties, though, is the question I would have as well. Like, I think both fouls actually occurred outside of the box, but they knew exactly what they were doing. They knew that this is the time to foul because there was every chance that they would be able to save the penalty, and that's exactly what they did. I'm going to give this to you as a potential moment of the match. 15 minutes in, Noel McGrath's point from 50 metres out. The reason why I think that this is just up there as one of the moments of the match, it's because Tipperary goal point up on this occasion, but it's after Owen Larkin is going to the referee, pointing in his face, saying, I should have got the free in. Now, in fairness, he should have got the free in on this occasion, but the point goes over. The Tip crowd are getting unbelievably rowdy at this point. I think Lara was just after getting one of his first involvements in the game. And I think it's at that moment, lads, when everybody kind of turns around to themselves and are like, okay, this game is going to be something special. There is something in the air today. This is going to be nip and tuck for the entire duration of the match. And I just thought that one score, that one moment, Owen Larkin getting angry, an icon of Kilkenny hurling getting angry at the referee at that point, you kind of knew that you were in for something special.
It started slow, the game. When I'm looking back last night, I'm kind of thinking, well, I'm waiting for this to get into gear. And then when it gets into gear, you're feeling that you're beginning to enjoy it, watching it back. And then from the moment you begin to enjoy it around like halfway through the first half, then you're completely engrossed and enthralled for the whole rest of the game. And that's what just completely reminded me of being back there, and like almost like bringing me back in like quantum leap style, the portal back into Croke Park in 2014 on that beautiful sunny day. And penalties wise, I think Jared's right. I think that attackers were actually at a disadvantage that year, because like when I'm looking back at Callanan on the replay last night, I'm thinking to myself, he's really, really far back. He actually hit it into the ground and it was saved. And of course, the rule has changed now. But Henry Shefflin in 2012 in the Galway match, the greatest performance I've ever seen from a hurler in a match individually, had a penalty and put it over the bar. So maybe Tipperary should have been putting these things over the bar. A lot of chances in the second half. Lara Corbett goal chance off the bar. Garrod Ryan goal chance. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe the percentage was the right play, because Kilkenny squeezed the percentages out of everything they did every time they played in All-Ireland, especially in the replay, but in this game as well.
Which Owen Larkin moment was it for you, Owen? Sorry, because there was a few. What happened?
When he's roaring at the referee.
For which time, though? Was it the time that he gets rugby tackled and then
15 minutes in when Noel McGrath has just put Tipperary 6 points to 5 up? And it's not so much what Owen Larkin is doing. It's just so much. It's all to do with how the crowd reacts and how I think McGrath celebrates after he scores the point. And you just kind of realise that's kind of like the start button. You've activated the All-Ireland final in that moment.
I thought Larkin was sensational in that first half, like absolutely sensational, and was accused of diving when he got his head taken off, high tackle, which, you know, nowadays might actually even be a red card because it's a high tackle. And then there was the second one where they played advantage after he'd just been poleaxed in two and still went and caught the next ball over his head, and I think might have tapped it over for a point. I thought he was absolutely sensational in that first half. Those Kilkenny forwards in that first half were unbelievable, and they were 2 points down at halftime.
But like, this is the thing. Who were actually the best forwards on show that day? Like, you're kind of thinking to yourself, and I really believe, I actually kind of go against you on that one completely. If you're thinking about a forward unit at halftime in that All-Ireland final in 2014, you're thinking about Tipperary's forwards. You're thinking about, is this up there with, I don't want to go too far here, but is this up there with 2010 in terms of a great performance from a bunch of forwards for Tipperary? Is it up there in terms of one of the great forward units in terms of their performances in an All-Ireland final since Tipperary 2010? Granted, I guess 2010 was more of an individual performance, but you're just looking around to yourself thinking, how is this a situation where Tipperary or where Kilkenny are only a couple of points behind, which kind of perhaps plays more into your point that under the radar, a lot of these Kilkenny forwards are having great games. TJ was having a great game quietly in the first half. Larkin started the game well, perhaps faded out in the second quarter. But everybody was thinking, I thought, about Tipperary. The halftime analysis was all about Tipperary, about Lar, about Callanan, about Bubbles and how they had started this game so well. And yet, despite one of these unbelievable forward displays, it was still very much a contest at halftime, which is just the greatness of Kilkenny, really. And it's also one of these strange contradictions we have from this game, is that pick out a Kilkenny forward or pick out a Kilkenny defender who had a bad game. I don't think you can. I don't think you can pick out.
I would say Brian Hogan didn't have the best of days. I would say he didn't have the best of days.
Okay, I suppose he got pulled out of position quite a bit, didn't he? And it was Lara on him when Lara was at centre forward, and he was kind of pulling Brian Hogan out of position. I'll give you that in fairness. But outside of that,
I thought he did all right. He got completely shafted and dropped for the replay. Like, a couple of the defenders ended up getting dropped. Pádraig Walsh comes in and Kieran Joyce comes in, who starts centre back and ends up winning man of the match in the replay. Yeah. Not a hint of him being on the team for this game.
Yeah, Cody'd former that with Walter Walsh as well in 2012. And we're talking about players that maybe didn't perform to the utter expectations of what they normally would. And that's the thing. And therefore, if Brian Cody makes what would be seen as a tough decision, then it's the spotlight on that person. He just got caught for the first goal for Bonner Maher. I think about half times and all that. I think generally in hurling matches, it's all about how far or how close you are at half time. I think the first half generally sets the tone, but it's the second half is when you really see the game, in my view. And that's why you had 28 minutes without a wide. And Kilkenny in the second half did not have one wide, not a single wide. From what I remember on the day, the best performances clearly for me were Richie Hogan and John O'Dwyer, because generally every time the ball was in their love, it was over the bar.
Mm. Any more moments here, John, that we're forgetting in terms of your moments of the match?
Well, obviously there was one moment of the match we'll get to, which is the Hawkeye moment. I think the TJ Reid goal at the start of the second half was crucial. That was a huge moment. Kind of going through it here, just the penalties being missed, and just really the kind of the way I felt that, like, defenders like Cathal Barrett and Paul Murphy played for each team. I think they had excellent games, and I think the moment of the match that would have been really, really controversial if John O'Dwyer's last minute effort had gone over was the fact that it was never in a foul in the first place. And no. Brian Hogan didn't foul his opponent, Pádraig Maher, and it should never have been given.
Paddy Saint not getting sent off for the face mask and then popping up down the other end. He was a man possessed after not getting sent off. He was like, OK, got out of jail. I'm going to play the best 15 minutes of my life here. Popping up left corner forward, hitting a point. Had a great block down, had an amazing tackle. Just had this, like, surge of energy. You know, I'm living my best life right now. I shouldn't even be here. And Richie Power did his very best to, like, look at the face mask. Like, he grabbed the face mask. Somebody else comes over to the referee to go, that was a face mask, should have been sent off. And Colin Fenley ends up pushing him out of the way, going, shut up. You know, like, there was this kind of little mad subplot for a minute and a half. And obviously, Paddy's like, right, well, maybe today's going to be my day. Because it looked like it. And he sees his moment really well. I thought that was great. Lar hitting the post, I literally gasped last night when it happened. I had completely forgotten about it. I was like, like the way you're not supposed to when you're watching something for the second time. It's supposed to be considered. But that was, I thought Lara was balletic. I thought that, like, his hand passing, there was one that went awry, but the rest of his hand passing was so slick and beautiful, and the ability to run with the ball fully extended in the hurl. Like, normally, you know, people are kind of soloing it close to them to, not Lar. He's like, I'm just gonna beat you for pace, even at this stage of my career. And the fact that the first one that he hit went straight over, I was like, wow, this is like, they've got everything out of this. There was a point, there was a 1-2 Richie Hogan and somebody had very early on, where Richie Hogan is like three lads around him. And again, it's just a hand pass. It might have been, I can't even remember who it was now, but that was beautiful. The other thing that we haven't talked about is there was the two Fenleys are through 2-on-1 situations twice, first and second half. and little brother tries to find big brother both times, and you're like, Colin, what are you doing? Just do it yourself. Mm. Just go for it. You're the killer.
Yeah, like it definitely completely cocks up that one in the first half anyway, where he just completely scuffs it along the ground. But let's not forget, Lahr had a similar opportunity in the second half where he actually turns away from goal.
Okay, and it's hits not it back,
as clear cut as Colin Fennelly, and he hits it backwards. A lot of strange things happened. Like, I think Colin Fennelly, a couple of moments in the first half, definitely fluffed his lines to a certain degree. But just on Lahr, like, I didn't appreciate, or perhaps it's just like a hazy memory, didn't remember how good Lahr was in this game, to the point where you kind of look at Lahr's legacy post 2010 and you think to yourself, you remember one thing, and that is following Tommy Walsh around. Like, that, when you think about post 2010, you think about that, and that
and
is
this
one
is
thing.
After that.
Like, yeah, exactly.
This amazing performance in an All Ireland final where, you know, like, he was in consideration, certainly, in the conversation for, maybe he's not in the conversation for man of the match, but he played really, really well, unbelievably effective. And this should be his legacy.
Yes, but, like, this is a proof of history getting written by the winners in the end. Like, this should have been a celebration of Lahr Corr, but if that is, like, an inch lower or an inch to the right, either direction, really, it's back at the net, and perhaps this is a very different outcome. We're talking about Lahr Corbett, the renaissance of Lahr Corbett, being around Tipperary for whatever 15 years and has finally put another crowning glory. You can forget about him following Tommy Walsh around. 2010 and 2014 is all we need to use to remember Lahr Corbett by, and it is the width of a post that stops us remembering him. Thus, it's cruel, but it is sport. I thought he was sensational, but I'd forgotten about it. Go on, John.
Yeah, history does rewrite things. Now, history's rewriting Kilkenny and Tipperary since that 2014 series, because Tipperary hammered Kilkenny by 9 points 2 years later, and then they beat them by 14 points last year. So you're thinking to yourself, I remember at the time thinking, Eamon O'Shea, what does he need to do, as Jarvis saying earlier on, to win All-Ireland? Because I think he was such a pure hurling man, and the way the game should be played, not with sweepers, this and that, as a rule, it should be played with beautiful freedom and complete... artistry, and that's what Eamon O'Shea espoused. And it's funny, like, looking at Michael Ryan beside Eamon O'Shea on the sideline, and he would lead Tipperary 2 years later, and Eamon O'Shea is back with Liam Sheedy last year, and he just loves hurling, and just as much as Brian Cody as well. But it's funny, like, I remember that year thinking to myself, Kilkenny have done it again. The boa constrictor came out in the replay, and they just suffocated Tipperary. And you're thinking, like, last year, the previous year, it was 2013, that Tipperary lost to Kilkenny in the qualifiers. 2012, with the Lahr Corbett game. And funnily now, you're thinking of Tipperary and the ascendancy. So it's only when history moves on and years move on that you have a little bit of a different picture than you had at the time. Because at the time, my picture was, Kilkenny are just one of these teams that are just the Terminator. You can never, ever defeat them. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think Kilkenny would have won the All-Ireland the next year, 2015, which is when I went on Twitter and did the Bart Simpson thing, where Bart Simpson, there's a kind of a black and white photo of Bart Simpson, like, you know, completely slumped in the chair when they beat Galway. And you're thinking, oh, this has happened again, because that was their 11th All-Ireland for Cody. The 2014 one was the one for 10. And the one thing we haven't spoken about yet was that Henry Shefflin was on the bench for the whole game, came on, had no impact, because... by that time, I think the game had seen him through. And Henry, because everybody was playing so well, didn't get a chance.
Didn't touch the ball, really.
Yeah.
Let's talk Hawkeye. It's been so well documented down through the years. This is not the thing that people forget about when the years pass, and what, it's almost 6 years since this All-Ireland final. Like, the one thing I had forgotten was actually the very first effort of the game. Colin Fennelly called Hawkeye into play, incorrectly ruled wide before Hawkeye corrected it for a point for Kilkenny. So there was a nice top and tail, a nice symmetry to this game provided by Hawkeye.
There was. I don't think this is the Hawkeye final, to be honest, because, like, the ball was wide. The right thing happened. The replay was the right result because Bubbles didn't actually score that free. That's... like, I'm alone in this, I understand.
Rephrase this. You are blaming this. Of course, you're blaming this on Bubbles Dwyer because he went a couple of inches to the right.
Yeah, but, like, it was too far out. Shouldn't have been a free. It would have been a great injustice if that had been the winning of the game.
And he also, nailed, He nailed one from inside of 65 in the first half.
He did, yeah, he did.
It's perfect sort of range. It's like it's Stephen Jones 2009 sort of vibes about it. It's like if you have this at any other point in the game, he probably makes it. But it's just that it is to decide the whole thing. It perhaps wavers your accuracy a little bit.
Maybe. Can I also just point out that there was 1 minute of additional time at the end of the game, and there was six subs. Like the whole, oh, we have a minute of additional time here. The sides are level. And then it was like straight over. Because I was thinking when the time was up, it was like 69:47 or whatever. And you're like, oh, well, how is this the end of the game? Because there's surely going to be about 4 or 5 minutes of stoppage time. There wasn't.
Yeah.
And at least they're going to let something else happen after this. But no, that was it. 1 minute. And he took the full minute. There was, I think, probably two subs made in between the awarding of the free and people coming on. And that was it. So, look, it is incredible drama. But the right outcome, because the ball was wide, was that it went to a replay.
For sure. There's no question.
It was shocking watching it back last night. There was only 1 minute of additional time, and I'm thinking of myself, was there another chance after the Hawkeye moment? And I think actually this was it. But I do remember being there, and I counted it. It took 30 seconds from the time Bubbles hit it until the time the decision was made, and it took 15 seconds from the time the umpire went and did the square. And fair play, because umpires get really badly maligned in Gaelic games, and the guy made the right call to send it to Barry Kelly to say that it would be a Hawkeye decision. And then it took 15 seconds from the umpire making the call for the decision to be made. And one thing that the replay doesn't get is that 82,000 people looked at a screen at Croke Park to decide the All-Ireland final. And that, to me, had never happened before. And everybody, it was just this a gasping for breath moment. And then you see Miss come up on the screen. And that was just utter, the best crescendo you could have had to the best hurling game I've ever seen. And to me, that's why I would always remember it as the Hawkeye final, would be my view. It was just being there, and everybody's cocking their heads towards one area in the ground and looking at a screen and going, it has all come down to this. All these months of training, all the winter nights, everything has come down to a screen deciding fate. It's like one of these game shows. And that to me was, for the Gaelic Athletic Association, as I said, that they couldn't get their timekeeping right in 1998, had to have it at this. Really just showed, like, it just felt so moderate even watching it last night, and it was 6 years ago.
If Tip had won it with that free, would they have deserved to win it?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, I think they would. I think they were the better team on the day. And I think that Kilkenny kept in it because of the goals they scored. But Tipperary didn't get the second chance, and Kilkenny were the better team in the replay. But I think for a spectacle, the way I kind of, when I wrote about this on offtheball.com last year, when I was talking about the best hurling games I've almost seen, they almost shouldn't have shared the All-Ireland that year. They should have, like, I don't know, got a saw out, an electric saw, cut the Liam McCarthy Cup in half, obviously one of the replica ones, and given it to each team and said, you know what, that's the greatest thing we've ever seen. We can share this. We just say it's a shared match, and we'll have another go at it next season. How can I say this that makes any logical sense? Kilkenny didn't deserve to lose it, but Tipperary deserved to win it.
Let's face it, they would have 100% added on the time for checking Hawkeye and waiting for Bubbles to take the free and a substitute had the ball gone over the bar. Like, they would have 100% found an extra 60 seconds to allow Kilkenny to get down the other. This was always destined.
Just put this out on top of Richie Hogan there. He'll stick it over. We'll all go home. It'll be a draw. Everybody's going to be happy.
This was the third replay in a row. This was, they knew the lavish lifestyle that could be enjoyed on a countrywide basis as a GAA man if you could let this go to a second day. We need to get on to Secret Man of the Match. We've covered a lot of this already, really. We've gone through a lot of the protagonists. Richie Hogan was actual Man of the Match. As I said at the top, he goes from midfield to centre forward. Has a huge impact in the second half of the game. When I'm looking through the secret men of the match here, there is more Tip men that I've picked out, certainly, than Kilkenny men. Like, Jerry, you've already mentioned Paddy Stapleton. I think that he has to be up there with a shout for man of the match on this occasion. Very lucky to not get sent off. But outside of that, one of the better defensive performances on the day also gets a score at the other end. And Cathal Barrett in the other corner, sensational. But I think it possibly just has to be Seamus Callanan, doesn't it? Just for the sustained excellence throughout the 70 minutes.
Did you notice Dignan says there's been this thing about Callinan that he doesn't perform on the big occasion. That's really unfair. And I'm like, well, I didn't know that. I didn't realize that there was this kind of sense that, oh, Seamus Callinan somehow is a bottler. Like, what? Who? And how wrong was that? When you're looking at this now, obviously, from him having fulfilled a hurler of the year, like, carried the weight of expectation, having come back from some serious injuries, you're like, wow. But Callinan's first touch is electric. He goes in a slaloming solo run, comes out to kind of left half forward position and just gets it and burns. And you're like, all right, he's at it today. And so I was absolutely thrilled to see him play really well. I thought Bubbles was sensational. He's 22.
Yeah. How secret does it need to be, though? And how secret do you need to be a secret man of the match?
Someone that's not Richie Hogan.
Bubbles at bar, obviously. Like, he was, I know he missed the free, and I know he missed a penalty, but the rest of his play, every time he got the ball from crazy angles from everywhere, it was over the bar. He got the equalising score, and he scored 7.5 from play. If it's not Richie Hogan, it's Bubbles. But it depends how secret we're getting and how nuanced we're getting about it. But the obvious one was Bubbles in my mind.
I'll take Bubbles. I've got him down here as well. Well, one of the things in terms of personnel and you mentioned Seamus Callinan and looking back from the year 2020 in terms of how that take on Seamus Callinan being a bottler is just so completely off the mark. We also look at it from our current vantage point and look at Bonner Maher and how brilliant he was at certain intervals in the game. How on earth did Tipperary manage to win an All-Ireland last year without this guy? Like, it's one of the forgotten themes of the 2019 hurling summer, the loss of Bonner Maher and still Tipperary being the best team in the country, quite simply.
Yeah, and how hopefully, if hurling returns this year, that we get to see him play a big role because he really deserves it. But there was one point where Eamon O'Shea runs in and talks to Darren Gleeson and he's basically saying, hit Bonner. With the puck outs. Mm. No more short. The short puck outs worked really well for them in the first half. There was one that went awry and then they went away from it totally and just lorried ball on top of Bonner, and he was absolutely sensational for the rest of that first half. Now, in the second half, Kilkenny got to grips with it a little bit and it didn't work as much. Absolutely sensational. I thought Lar, I would have had in my shout for secret man of the match, but I thought that there was any number of the Kilkenny forwards who could have had it. Richie Power scores two goals in an All-Ireland final. Yeah. Both of them are absolutely beautiful in different ways. One of them is just the poacher's instinct. The other one is pure balance and running and just the ability to... And the other thing about the second goal is that there's an amazing bit of play from Michael Fenley where a ball breaks and he dribbles past three lads and hits this perfect ball up to the forward line. And that was him coming into the game in the midfield role as opposed to not being able to get into the game as much as he was in the first half. Although maybe if the brother hits him with a better pass, he scores the goal and everybody goes, what a great performance that was. So, but I thought he was definitely a contender for man of the match. I thought, I don't think Owen Larkin in any way faded in the second quarter. In the second half, he wasn't as amazing, but I thought he was sensational in that first half. Like, he would have been right there for man of the match in the first half. And ironically enough, Richie Hogan's first half wasn't anywhere near as good as the second half. So those switches clearly worked and he found a bit more space. TJ Reid played really well. Really well.
1-8 scored a Gerard Muller goal that out of the blue that once again changed the narrative and the tide in the second half, the first score of the second half, and how the players would need to fill themselves up again to go again. No, that they're never going to shake this Kilkenny team off their backs. Scored the last Kilkenny point. And it's funny, I think we all saw in the following year how TJ Reid would become hurler of the year, that he was so crucial to Kilkenny. So he was definitely up there for me as one of the players of the match.
Let's get into some of the trends from the game. I think it's not, and when we get into most jarring moments as well, there's not a whole pile of them because it is not exactly prehistoric, this game. It's fairly notable in the memory. Some of the things that kind of stuck out to me, obviously, in terms of trending, the Anthony Nash rule was the big trend of the summer. Hawkeye was very much on vogue. And another thing was that this is obviously something that's been around hurling for a long time, but I think it was particularly strong in the summer of 2014, was that no matter what position your body was in or what way your body was turned, a point was always on. It was this stage where, okay, Seamus Callinan has the ball by the sideline at an unbelievably acute angle. He is going for a point here and it will probably go over the bar. This idea of Richie Power, before he scored his goal, knocked over an amazing point from the sideline. And I mean that, and I choose that very, very deliberately, knocked over the ball from the sideline. this is what the hurlers were doing at this point. We had reached the peak of skill output in this game, and the over the shoulder by the sideline point was very much trending. Like, John, you've already touched on some of the things that certainly jarred, like Shefflin being on the periphery, not really having much to do whatsoever when he came on. It's just always jarring because it is Henry Shefflin, despite the fact that it is 2014. None of the Welchers from Tullerone being centrally involved as well. A little bit jarring when you look back at a great Kilkenny team.
Power comes off the bench. Power comes off the bench and starts the replay.
Yeah, exactly. But in this moment, in the first game, no real, like, not a huge amount of input. And Lara kind of jarred at me as well. I'd just forgotten how good he was in 2014. I'm not sure what stuck out to you, lads.
I think that, like, this Kilkenny team is still, it still has enough of the great players playing well. Like, it's not Henry Shefflin's team anymore. It's Richie Hogan's team. It's TJ Reid's team. Like, we're definitely getting towards the end of Jackie Tyrrell and getting towards the end of JJ Delaney. But they're still young enough to be really important players and to be able to have good games, even though the defence ends up conceding whatever, 120, whatever. They were still key players and they were still making blocks and they were still making tackles and hooks. And this is, like, so the next year is obviously the last time that Kilkenny win All-Ireland, and that's the end of that great team, even though some of them are still playing up to now. We should appreciate this was the greatest team of all time. That's the whole point about this Kilkenny team. They were the greatest hurling team of all time, and there's enough of them around in this match for it, that to be the same team.
Yeah, and I think that it's not necessarily the best Kilkenny team of that era, but it still had enough quality in it to get the job done through the goals they scored in the game, the 9 points they scored through goals. And like the best Kilkenny team was probably 2008. This is what, 6 years later. And it just shows how single-minded Brian Cody was and is, that Henry Shefflin, to me, produced the best ever performance I've ever seen in the Galway game 2 years previously. They won the replay handily, and then he's not involved 2 years later in a final. When you think sentiment would suggest that, oh, we'll put Henry in, it's his 10th All-Ireland, sentiment doesn't come into one iota. Kieran Joyce comes in for the replay at centre-back and wins man of the match. And they go man-on-man in the replay. Nothing really jarred, to be honest. How can you say, if you're going to go and make the statement like Moses and the Commandments that this is the greatest hurling game I've ever seen, and even feeling last night that my judgment in my own mind was on the ball, of course, people will say that other matches were just as good. But for me, I think it was just the freedom and the naive beauty of it. What jars, like, for me in hurling is sometimes is all these tactics and this and that, where this was the game played the way it should be played. And you're all these talking about, like, black cards and, yeah, you know, all these kind of things. This to me was just pure freedom. Pure freedom. It was like something from mythology, from Cú Chulainn or Satanta or something like that. It was just... If you were going to give the tape or bring anybody from outside of Ireland to a hurling game, give them a ticket, give them a day out for a few drinks or whatever and a meal, and you say, OK, we're going to go to something amazing today. This is the day, the sunny weather, the end-to-end, the controversy, the penalties, the Hawkeye, the two great teams. It is the most quintessential essence of Irishness that I can see this day. And so how can I say that anything jars when I'm looking at that and I'm describing that now?
That's a very interesting point you make, John, because we've all been, maybe it's just me, but we've all been in that position where, you know, we're at a pub chatting to a few Americans who've come to town and they're asking about hurling and they're like, what is this game? What is this crazy warrior sport? And, you know, you do the thing where you go on YouTube and you're like really proud of hurling when you're Googling it. This is actually the game that comes up first if you just Google hurling. I think, or at least it used to be last time I'd engage in such an activity like showing an American a video of hurling. And if you actually go into the comments on YouTube, all the comments are from people around the world saying, how have I not seen this game before? This is incredible. So it seems that this is almost the first ad you get for hurling whenever you look at it online. And you're right. I'm not sure do I agree with you in the point that, like, this is the way hurling should be played. I think you can play hurling in whatever game, in whatever way you deem is fit. But I think this was the natural next step for hurling, wasn't it? After this moment, it was going to be sweepers. It was going to be defensive systems. Sorry, Ger, but I just think that this is the moment where we saw pure flowing hurling at its peak. And there was always going to be
a change. There was going to be an alteration. I'm not saying the game has got worse. I think the last couple of seasons have been incredible.
Yeah,
but there was always going to be a change after.
Clare won the All-Ireland the year before, so and they obviously had sweepers under Davy Fitz. So I don't think this is the sweepers are reacting to this. Can I just actually make the counter argument though that the two penalties, if there had been a black card for either of those, it would have swung the game. And it would have given the attacker the option of scoring a goal, which actually I think that, I just think that there is definitely room for this game to improve. That Tipperary created those goal chances and key defenders would have ended up being off the field for 10 minutes if we had sin-bid, for example, or being replaced for the entire game if the black card was in. It's obviously never coming in hurling. It's not going to happen. But I do feel like you could professionally foul in the game at that point, and it's a weakness. It is a weakness of the game that, like, there's no punishment for it because you end up getting three amazing shot stoppers on the line for penalties, and that did jar for me a little bit.
Yeah,
it's a fair point. It's a fair point. Now it's now just the goalie now, and I think it was just the forwards were at a disadvantage with the way the reaction towards against the Nash the way he was taking penalties, and there was nothing wrong with the way he was taking penalties, just taking it the way he was, or people were feeling that it was dangerous at the time. But yeah, so I do think Tipperary were actually disadvantaged by that, and it is unfortunate they didn't win that All-Ireland. It really is, but history will now say that they won the 16 and the 20 finals and comfortably. So I don't think the psychological scars are there from that. One thing as well, I was very lucky enough to get a ticket the following year, the 2015 final, right at the sideline, like literally behind Anthony Cunningham from Galway. And I was in the seat behind him. So effectively, I was in the dugout. And one thing you don't see when you're up in the stands is how quick this thing moves on ground level. It is ridiculous. It's hard to get your mind to process it, really, how quickly everything moves and how instinctive the whole thing is. And this was not a good game, Kilkenny beating Galway. Not a good match. Galway were great in the first half, but didn't turn up in the second half. And even to be Ryan Cody or Eamon O'Shea on that day, to see this, I'd say, from ground level, was something else. And to be able to make decisions then in real time.
Yeah.
These guys are good. These guys are talented at making decisions in real time. And they've no, like, back in the day when George Graham in the 80s with Arsenal would be up in the director's box. There's nobody in their ear. They're able to make these decisions in real time. And one thing I don't think people understand is sometimes the speed of the way this thing moves. And the speed of this game, the flow was Niagara Falls flow, pulsating, Mad Max stuff, crazy stuff, and great stuff.
Just one of the last points I want to make is that this game has completely reevaluated how I've looked at this Kilkenny team. Like, I had this completely wrong view in my head that, you know, Brian Coley coming to do back-to-back in 2014, 2015 is right up there as one of his greatest ever managerial achievements. And it is a great achievement to come back and do back-to-back All-Irelands in any era, of course it is. But this is still an unbelievably good Kilkenny team. I had it in my head that they were all past it, that you had people playing well beyond the hill and all that sort of thing. Not the case. This Kilkenny team is outstanding. Tipperary played out of their skin in this drawn game in 2014 and could not beat them. And I think that sums up this Kilkenny team. It is why they came back to win the replay. It is why they came back the following year to win this All-Irelands. And like doing back-to-backs there, it is fantastic. But it is almost something you might expect of a team packed with talent like this Kilkenny team was. The final thing we just need to do, lads, before we wrap this morning is just give this an underrated or overrated. I'm going to go first, and I think it's just absurd if anybody can say this thing is overrated. Can anybody make a case that this is overrated?
Nah.
No.
I did see somebody else saying that this was too much like an exhibition match. Somebody was tweeting this yesterday saying, yeah. I've always found, says Gareth Cummins here, I've always found the 09 final where Kilkenny won the four in a row the best I've ever seen. It had everything. Tipper heroic in defeat. PJ Ryan was man of the match. That game in 14, as good as it was like the opening of a pitch too open. The game in 09 was far more intense. I think that was pretty intense yesterday, Gareth. I'd watch that again. I mean, I see there's a sensibility there where certainly the Kilkenny defenders thought they were too open and went man for man in the replay and were like, that'll not happen to us again. And that, you know, maybe that's where you're getting this from with Gareth, but I don't agree.
No, yeah, absolutely not. It's underrated for me, John.
underrated, and I don't think underrated or overrated, it's just the best. And once again, I'll say no wides between the 44th minute and the 72nd minute. And I'm almost, because I knew that, I was waiting to see how were there no wides, and there were no wides. There was great clearances, the Paddy Stapletons, there was, you know, sidelines, there was this and that, and it was just quality. It's, you know, the quality mark, you know, that Q mark, or the sign they put on a product, you know, they just, the fact that it went to Hawkeye just, to me, makes it just so special. And that it does stand out as in the annals of time. People will always have their favourites, but this one for me stood out. And as well, don't forget, lads, it was a final. It wasn't a Munster game that you could have a second chance in. It was a final. It was the Lee McCarthy Cup in the stand on the line.
Yeah, absolutely. That is pretty much us for this morning, Ger. We're going to hand back to you in studio, but get in touch at Off the Ball if you've got any shouts for Classic Game Clubs. TG Cahir showing a lot of good stuff over the courses of these few weekends, it seems. So you can watch the full thing back on YouTube if you're just joining us. And it was on TG Cahir, as I said, yesterday.
John, good stuff. Owen, before I let you go, the most important piece of advice that we got over the weekend was sung to the tune of O Roll, Shed About Hawalia.
Is that right? I saw you putting in this tweet there yesterday, actually. How does it go?
Oh, Ro, stay the fuck a while, yeah.
Oh, Ro, stay the fuck a while, yeah. Oh, Ro.
You were supposed to join in at that point.
Because I don't know the words.
You don't know the words to Oh, Ro, shit about a while, yeah.
Well, Oh, Ro, and then what's the next line? You can't just repeat that for four lines, can you?
You do three of them.
Oh, and live the fucking lava.
Need a fucking lava. Oh,
okay, there you go. That's pretty poor. I don't know. I'm just thinking what it might be.
No, that was it. That was it. You were right.
Okay, yeah. Great. Fantastic. Well, there you go. There's your tune. If you are thinking of not washing your hands this morning, think of that tune.
When in doubt, seek the wisdom of your elders. The old Irish songs are the best. Oh, Ro, stay the fuck a while, yeah. Oh, Ro, stay the fuck a while, yeah. Oh, Ro, stay the fuck a while, yeah. August need a fucking lava. Apologies for any of the young ears that might have heard that. But, you know, they need to hear it too. How do you feel about the fact that the millennials are getting all the blame here, Owen?
Well, as I was saying earlier on, it's you can't actually pin this whole thing down. Like, was it just millennials in the Beshoff's queue yesterday in Howth?
I think it might just have been millennials in Temple Bar, though. That was the bit where you guys got your bad rep.
Yeah, it's true. There was one tweet that I saw yesterday, which was certainly entertaining. It was from somebody called Adeli Barbosa. He says, to everyone calling us selfish for going out during lockdown, you're just jealous because your mum won't let you out.
Saw that. Like 9 million likes. All right, fair enough, because your ma will let you out. Right, well, we're all allowed out. We're going to keep producing top-quality sports content for you forever, it turns out. If you've got anything you'd like us to cover, you can get in touch with us by WhatsApp. 087-9-180-180 is the number to send your videos to. And remember, if you're sending us videos, do please turn the phone around, do it landscape, not portrait. Every day at 12 o'clock, Richie's Isolation Mix, top tunes on OTB Sports Radio, as picked by our own music maestro, Richie McCormack, every day at noon. It's to remind you to, you know, put down the scrolling news, listen to some good music, get a little bit of fresh air if you possibly can. Off the Couch at 1 o'clock on all of our social channels across OTB. So you'll get it on Instagram, you'll get it on Facebook, you'll get it on YouTube and Twitter as well. Every day we're going to give you some exercise at 1 o'clock, and the AM podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. Best place, of course, is the Go Loud app or offtheball.com. Richie McCormack's Isolation Mix. Remember to take a break from working from home, stick the mix on at midday, get some fresh air, take a walk, while remembering to keep your 2 meter social distance every day at midday. And one thing on tonight, I should let you know, Simon Zeebo talking about lockdown in Paris, Kieran McGean talking about the Olympic Games, and the football show coming your way from 7 o'clock. This morning we have Kelly Harrington, Alan Quinlan, the latest sports news and another Classic Game Club. OTB Ireland's first and only sports breakfast show, AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Good luck.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.